Hey everybody, welcome to episode 26 of The Good, Bad, and The Wretched. My name's Chris, with me is Josh.
Hello.
And we were just discussing...
Hi, wait, I didn't get a chance to say hi.
Hi.
Hi, everyone.
We were just discussing our flatulence meeting in the middle of the room.
Don't talk about
that. An atomic bomb.
Don't talk about that, man.
This is how...
We're supposed to be professionals.
This is totally how juvenile we get at times. I just thought I'd throw it out there just so people know that, you know...
No, but they shouldn't know these things. Some things are private.
It's a fog game, son. You play one day soon. As Eddie Murphy said famously. So, welcome to episode 26. Today, we're going to talk about bugs, insects, creepy crawlies.
Yep.
But first, let's talk about what we've watched, as usual. And why don't you start?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've been continuing on my little Nightmare on Elm Street revisitation. So, I watched Dream Warriors. That was the next one after... Because I haven't done one of these since we did...
The Freddy episode, no.
What one?
Since we did Freddy's Revenge, yeah.
Freddy's Revenge. So yeah, the next one I watched is Dream Warriors from 1987. This is Nightmare on Elm Street 3, directed by Chuck Russell, who went on to make The Blob and The Mask. Blob remake, I should say. All right, so I mean...
Here's Josh stumbling his way into the minority. Get ready for this.
Okay, so first of all, this movie stars Craig Wasson...
Yeah,
and I can't get past body double with this guy. This guy, I just can't think of him any other way than this pervert who's spying on people. So that's all I could think of when I'm watching this guy trying to help Patricia Arquette's character.
Yeah, but it also brings back Heather Langenkamp from the original.
It does, but this guy is so wimpy. Like, I just... Whatever happened to Craig Wasson, I wonder?
Who knows? I didn't
look him up either. But anyway, that was kind of a bummer. It does bring back... So this one does bring back Heather Langenkamp from the first movie. It's set in a mental institution. And we've got a group of people who are all being stalked by Freddy. I guess these are the last survivors, kids of... Is that right?
I think it's the last kids of the Elm Street. But the thing about this, Josh, is that it's a movie set at a mental institution.
Yes.
Where the kids have problems... Freddie plays their problems off of themselves and their dreams, but you have to think of it this way. How can you stop going to sleep when you're medicated to go to sleep?
Exactly. I mean, I know it was such a dilemma, and I was really worried for the kids throughout because I was so compelled by their characters.
Well, look at this fucking sarcasm flying out the gate right here.
I didn't get it, man. Okay, so the whole thing's in this hospital, like Chris said, and yeah, they're being medicated, but I just didn't connect with any of these characters.
Not even Kincaid? Come on, man.
Kincaid was... kind of funny, but I didn't really like them at all. Lawrence Fishburne was in this. Thought he was just kind of there, wasn't really doing anything.
Yeah, he was just like kind of the intern-y kind of guy.
Yeah, I did like this, how it went back to the dreams as you know, as opposed to part two where
Freddy just stumbling around at a pool party,
yeah,
slashing people up in real time. It was, you know, he was stalking them in their nightmares, which is what the whole crux of the original was.
Exactly. But I've tried Dream Warriors 3 times now in my life, and I've never understood the love for this one.
I don't understand you.
Well.
I love Dream Warriors.
I know. So why?
Well, it's just because it's... The thing about Dream Warriors is it's a fun movie, for starters.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that fun.
The death scenes in this one are really creative, I thought. Like, you know, when he strings the guy up like a puppet using his
veins. Yeah, that was kind of neat.
That's cool.
I thought it looked a little silly, but I thought it was
kind of cool.
You
know, and the whole thing about all these kids banding together to fight Freddy is kind of cool because, like, they're all outcasts, you know? And for a lot of us horror movie guys like me, I was an outcast.
Right.
When I was in high school and stuff. And, you know, you see people... teaming together to go up against this big nightmarish boogeyman, why wouldn't you get behind that?
I guess because, yeah, I mean, the only character I really liked was Jennifer Rubin's character. She was kind of a, she was definitely an outcast, kind of a weirdo chick, and I liked it when she got all punked up, and I liked her, just her kind of, the fact that she had just sort of accepted the fact that she was kind of doomed. That's kind of the vibe she was giving me. I did like her, yeah, but it wasn't enough for me to carry the movie.
I just think that, like, look at who's behind this. Like, Frank Darabont was one of the co-writers.
Right.
And they did bring back Wes Craven to co-write it. I mean, I don't think he was involved as much as he should have been because he was off doing, like, Deadly Friend and stuff at the time.
Right.
But I just liked how it brought it back to what Freddy was supposed to be. I'm not sure if I think that this is when he started really being a Joker.
Yeah, like, I saw when he started
stumbling towards the Jokery pop culture.
Definitely that change, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not sure if I think that's too great of a thing because I really don't like wisecracking Freddy as much.
Right.
As I do, you know, Wes Craven's original Freddy. But he hadn't got to be such a cartoon character in this movie like he does in the later ones that I could still, like, buy into it. Because, like I said, the dream sequences were cool. And, you know, he was still menacing in this one a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas in the sequels, he was just kind of like, you know, a Marx brother in a way. He was just like,
yeah,
you know, comic relief.
Well, and I did like the concept of, you know, them. I liked how Langenkamp could, like, you know, figured out a way that they could go into each other's dreams and all that. So I like the idea. I just, you know, I mean, I'm even thinking back to the Elm Street 2 episode, you know, where Matt was going on about how this was, like, more of the fun movie that he goes back to, even as opposed to the original.
Yeah.
And I know people say that, but I just don't get that. Like, I mean, we're going to talk about part four in a second, but I thought part four was way more enjoyable than this one.
Why don't we talk about part four right now?
All right. Okay. So I went on to, after this one, I went on to part four, which is The Dream Master, which is in 1988. This is directed by Rennie Harlan.
Yep.
And so the lead, Patricia Arquette's character, Kristen, is replaced in this one by Tuesday Knight, who also sings the opening theme, I might add.
And I actually found her to be less annoying than Patricia Arquette, to be honest.
Yeah, I didn't like Patricia Arquette. And I do like Patricia Arquette as a role, but I didn't like her in
Dream Warriors. I found her a little bit annoying in the original Nightmare, like in Nightmare 3, but I think that's because it was like her movie debut.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one thing I want to talk about Dream Warriors, before we move on, is Rockin' with Fucking Dawkins.
I know, and that's, you know, when I think of that movie, that's all I think about.
But that song's awesome.
It is awesome, but it doesn't happen until the end credits.
No.
And I just, I mean, I thought Kincaid was kind of fun.
Yeah.
The other guy I didn't like at all. The guy that was kind of the lead guy.
Right.
The kind of, like, mousy guy.
Yeah.
I didn't like him at all. Like, I don't know. I just...
Okay, so why did you like 4 better?
I just thought it was just a way... I guess also being confined to that mental institution didn't help matters either. And I didn't feel like it was really used. Like, when I'm in a confined space, I want it to be kind of like CG, you know, like I want it to feel like I want to feel that like claustrophobia of being not able to leave. And again, I didn't really feel that. So there's just a lot of things I think could have happened in Dream Warriors that didn't. Okay, so this one opens, Nightmare 4 opens things up again, so we're now not confined, and we're back out to, like, the neighborhood type area, and the Elm Street house is in it, and Kristen returns, like I said, replaced by a different actress, but this one's really about a woman named Alice. She kind of starts out as, like, a mousy redhead, but as the movie progresses, she becomes stronger when she realizes that she is the quote-unquote dream master who's able to, like, go into dreams and be able to help people and pull people out of bad situations and that type of thing. I liked the cast way more in this one. Her brother is named Rick. I thought he was pretty fun and very likable. And, you know, he was doing nunchucks to Dramarama. I thought that
was
pretty cool.
This is my first introduction to Dramarama was from Nightmare 4.
And
so
it's used really well.
I give it great
song.
Credit for that.
So what's it? Anything. Yeah, that's a great song.
Yeah.
And I thought it was used really well in this movie because it was used once when that Rick character is working out, and then it's used again later in the movie. Yeah.
4 was the first movie to actually have a soundtrack with, like, music artists on it, where they actually released it on cassette and CD, because they did this for part 4 and part 5, and I think Freddy's Dead had a CD soundtrack too, because they tied and all this stuff, because I think it's part four that had "Are You Ready for Freddy" by the Fat Boys.
I'm not sure.
I think it was four, because five had your favorite, Houdini.
Oh, did it?
With Any Way I Gotta Swing It. That was on five.
Editor's note, not my favorite, but I do enjoy them.
Houdini is your favorite.
The freaks come out at night.
Freaks come out. But the thing about four is, okay, this is what, I don't like four as much as three.
Yeah.
The thing I give four credit for is, if you're going to bring back Freddy, you got to have a pissing fire dog to do it, right?
Yeah, like there's a dog
that's in the fucking awesome
that pisses fire and opens resurrects up the ground. Freddy. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was awesome.
Flaming dog piss resurrection. You can't complain with that. I just thought the tone of this one was really too comedic at times. Like the whole thing with like Freddy's, like she's on the beach and Freddy's claw comes out of the water like a Jaws fin and stuff. I was just no, it's kind of stupid.
And you know, I think I didn't mind that because I thought they were starting to do that in part three and I thought it fell flat. And in this one, I actually kind of embraced the comedy a bit.
I like it when the guy's like lying on his waterbed and the naked girl comes
Hope
up.
Hope Marie Carlton.
Yeah, and he like...
And it's a poster of her and then, she comes alive.
And then he like, Freddy jumps out of the bed and he's like grabbing the guy. He's like, how is this for a wet dream? And I'm like, okay, that's okay.
This movie,
and
man,
that line actually comes up in one of the later movies. I can't remember which one, but he repeats that line in one of the later movies.
Yeah. And like, okay, so in Dream Warriors, I mean, we talked about the, what was that one? The Vance and marionette thing.
Yeah.
There was the Freddy snake thing that happened in that. And then there was that kill where there's like a
Welcome
TV,
to prime time,
yeah,
bitch.
The TV kill. So those were the main ones in that one. This one, there's like this... there's a kung fu scene, a kung fu kill. There's a
invisible kung fu Freddy killer, as I like to call it.
Yeah. There's a robot hand, and then Freddy's exclaiming, "Want to suck face?" and like draining the life out of this girl, like in Life Force or something. There was also a there was this pizza. Pizza with these meatballs on it.
That part four? Is that part
that
five?
That had Freddy's face on them.
Because the chick was bulimic, right? So he was like force feeding her.
Yeah. Is that what happened?
Was in four or was
No,
that
I don't
five?
Think she was bulimic. He just goes, it's just these pizza meatballs. And then he like eats one. He's like, I love soul food. And then this had that really great scene where this woman turns into a cockroach.
Which I was going to bring up later.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it does kind of
the
Screaming
Mad George effects.
Yeah, Screaming Mad George and someone else.
Steve Johnson, I think,
Steve
did
Johnson,
some of the effects in this one,
Yeah, so, and then there's this really cool, like I said, the lead character goes through a transformation. There's a great, I thought a really great battle scene in a church at the end, where Linnea Quigley's naked chest comes out of Freddy's chest, I guess. I don't know, there was a really neat... a really neat scene where they kept repeating the same scene because they were like stuck in the dream.
Around the same time as the cockroach scene.
And like the two of the characters.
Cause they were rushing to try and save the person.
Yeah. But it kept going back and you're like, what the hell is
going
on?
And they were stuck
in
a time loop. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that was a really neat idea. I really noticed the cinematography in this, and I think that's credit to Rennie Harlan. There was a lot of really crazy like overhead shots, there was a shot in a bedroom. I think it was when that guy died in the waterbed, and there was this like really inventive, crazy overhead shot. And I noticed a couple of shots like that were really quite inventive. And like I said, I think credit to Rennie Harlan on that. I don't know. There was just a lot to like about this one, and especially after part three that I'm supposed to like, apparently. I thought this was way more entertaining, and I had a lot more fun with this one. So I still, to this day, don't get the love for Dream Warriors, and you haven't really convinced me tonight either. So you kind of actually seem to like this one a little more, too.
No, I like three better.
Yeah, but I don't get it. So I hope maybe I will one day, but it's just one of those ones I just don't
like
get.
Like I said... It's like the whole thing that appeals to me the most about 3 is that it's a band of misfits teaming together to fight Freddy and all using these specific dream powers they have, which have made them like these are kids who are in a mental hospital, okay?
Yeah.
So they're going into these fantasy worlds in their dreams where they're a strong person or they're like, you know, empowered. Whereas in real life, they're trapped in this friggin' situation. So they're using this empowerment to fight Freddy.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it appealing to me because, you know, everyone's felt like an outcast at one time. And I also thought the concept of it being in a asylum where you are medicated to sleep.
Yeah.
Makes it a lot more desperate because you're like, you don't want to sleep because you know what's going to happen, but you can't fight it because you're forced to. And that adds a new wrinkle for me because you remember even in the first one, she was like drinking the coffee and taking all that stuff to stay awake because she didn't want to face Freddy. Well, what if you're thrown in a situation like in 3 where you have no choice but to face Freddy? So you have to embrace your dream powers to take him on.
And I get that. And I get
that's why this movie has the universal appeal, I think.
But that's so the concept wise, I understand that. But I think my thing with Dream Warriors is that a lot of people, and Matt is in my very recent memory saying how much of a fun popcorn movie it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get that at all. I think if we're looking for a fun popcorn movie, Part 4 is way more of that. I get what you're saying about the concept of Part 3. But I just didn't feel like it was also executed the way it could have
and
been.
And also Part 3 was when we started getting Freddy backstory. That's when we started getting the whole son of a thousand maniacs kind of thing, right? Like with the nun and everything.
Yeah.
That's when they started putting the mythology of Freddy into the movies that was followed from in all the sequels.
Yeah.
So that's where 3 comes in too, because in the first one, you know, Wes laid down the basic, you know, he was a child killer. The parents took revenge.
Yeah.
You know, this one says, okay, well, he did those things, but this is why he ended up like that, because, you know, his mother was a nun who was, you know, basically raped in an asylum.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like it added this mythos to the character, which the previous two movies did not have either.
Right.
So that's also why I think 3 has that love, because it's bringing that to the table as well.
And I guess I just have never really gotten into the mythos of Freddy.
Yeah.
I've always been kind of a Jason and Michael Myers guy.
Yeah.
I've never really bought into the whole Freddy thing. I've always enjoyed, you know, the kills and stuff, which, you know, sounds so juvenile, but it is what I remember about the Freddy movies. I never really got too wrapped up, other than the first one, in the whole Freddy character. I mean, I totally get what you're saying. I'm just saying from my perspective and from more of an entertainment standpoint, I thought this was way better.
Okay.
Part 4. So
fair enough.
I know we'll probably agree on Part 5 at least.
Probably. Probably.
Yeah. So that's it for...
Nightmare movies?
Nightmare. So another one I wanted to bring up, because I've been putting this off for a couple of weeks, is I watched Joysticks.
Oh, God.
Which is a 1983 sex comedy from director Graydon Clark, who also brought us Satan's Cheerleaders and Black Shampoo and Angel's Brigade.
And The Uninvited, which is the first ever killer cat movie I remember seeing.
Oh, he did that too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He was also an actor in Satan's Sadist, one of my favorite biker movies.
Oh, okay.
And he acted in quite a few... kind of drive-in classics of the 70s. Well, I don't know about classics, but drive-in movies of the 70s. So this is a movie based around an arcade. The opening of this movie I thought was really fun, because, I mean, this is my time. I mean, I was 11 when this came out.
Well, this was at the peak of arcades, too, because it's 1983.
Exactly. We were just talking about arcades tonight. But, I mean, it opens up with, like, shots from Pole Position and Defender.
Yeah.
And then it pans down to a girl in a blonde and really short shorts playing the game. So,
and then it's got that awesome theme song.
Oh, yeah.
Wiggle it, push it up, pull it down, play it with my joystick. Yeah. All that, like, sexual innuendo in the in the song, even. I'm like, as soon as that was, like, when this movie started, when I first, like, saw it recently, like, maybe 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Okay, so you got the arcade shots, you got the hot girl shot, you got a guy singing about playing with his joystick. okay. I'm okay with this movie right now.
Yeah, it was pretty. It's got a really great opening and a really nostalgic opening. Yeah,
definitely.
So then we get into we meet the main character Eugene, who's this kind of nerd guy, played by Leif Green. He hasn't done a lot. He would think he was in Grease too, and not much else. But he's on his way to work at these. It's his first day at the arcade, and he's approached by these two really hot girls in this convertible, and they sort of seduce him because they're trying to get a Polaroid of him with his pants down. But again, you know, I'm showing a lot of promise. You know, we've got some nudity right away, and we've got this nerd character, so it's, you know, just got all the kind of 80s sex comedy tropes.
I kind of remember one of the girls in the convertible being somebody familiar, but I can't recall who at the time. I don't know if you...
Well, Chris, that was Kim Mallon, and she's a May 1982 Playmate of the Month. That's okay. Probably where you recognize her from.
Yeah, because I was just so into Playboys when I was like 8, dude.
And the other one was really cute too, but she hasn't really done much. Anyway, we get to the arcade, and then we meet Jeff, the manager, played by Scott McGinnis. He's kind of your typical kind of 80s preppy guy, but he's cool. He's not like a jerk preppy guy. He's kind of a neat, cool preppy guy because he owns the arcade. And we also meet Dorfus, who's your overweight
mannerless
slob.
Yeah,
played by Jim Greenleaf. And actually, Chris and I watched a movie about a year ago called The Vals.
Yeah,
and there was a token
and it was
overweight
him.
Guy. That's this guy. So I knew I recognized him from somewhere.
Oh yeah, the guy played it. The guy played that character at least 3 to 4 times, I think.
Yeah, so you know, there's some hijinks going on at the arcade, and then pretty soon we meet the punk gang led by this guy named the Vidiot.
King Vidiot
and his
John Grease
from Real Genius and
Fright Night 2.
I didn't recognize him.
He was fucking awesome
in
Joysticks.
And even watching him, I couldn't recognize him.
He was like, actually my favorite thing about Joysticks.
He's pretty fun.
Because I don't really like Joysticks, to be honest.
I know you don't. But yeah. And he's got this group of like these four girls that are all like punked out. And they're Vidiot's trying to like King Vidiot. Is like thinks he's the best video game player, but Dorfus is actually kind of the king.
Yeah,
of
when
video
he can take time out from like farting and almost like, you know, having sex with older women by mistake.
Fart a lot.
Yeah,
there's a pretty disturbing taking advantage of an older woman.
Yeah,
scene.
Like let's sneak into her house.
And she's drugged up, so let's rub ourselves all over.
Seems like we've been watching a lot of movies lately with women getting drugged up.
It's true.
It's disturbing the amount of women drugging that went on in the 80s.
Anyway, aside from the women being drugged, I thought this was, I think it's a pretty fun movie. We also got Joe Don Baker from Walking Tall. He's the like nemesis.
Town councilman.
Yeah, trying to shut down the arcade. Yeah. I think it's a pretty innocent movie. It's not, there's quite a bit of nudity, but it doesn't feel over the top, and it just feels innocent.
They
have
their big showdown at the end where like Joe Don Baker's hired like King Vidiot to like take on Dorfus in a video game tournament.
He's hired him to take on Jeff.
Oh, take
who
on
can't
Jeff.
Play video games because of this traumatic video game experience in his past.
Yeah. And the thing is, they're playing this game called Satan's Hollow.
Yeah,
which I used to play all the time.
Did but you? I don't remember that.
But they're
game
playing
at all.
It with this like fucking gigantic controller. It's like the size of a human's head.
So like one of the features of this arcade is you've got these like giant screens where they like people can have like a showdown of a video game with this giant joystick. So like a lot of the movies centered around this showdown.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
It's pretty stupid, but it really, I mean, I can't think of a lot of other movies based around arcades. So it's just kind of a nice little time capsule of that time in the
80s. I do like the movie for the nostalgia that you're talking about. But I just, if I want to watch a sex comedy from the 80s, I'm not going to watch Joysticks. There's just something about it that I didn't really like.
Yeah.
I can't put a finger on it. I think it's just because it was so cliched and stereotyped even by then.
Yeah.
That I was just like, oh, there's your typical fat guy. Oh, he farted, you know, and, you know, it's just things like that. Like, there's other ones that I just feel had more charm than Joysticks.
Well, this has the charm with the arcade. The thing about Joysticks that I could see turning people off is it does feel really low budget. like, I feel movies like Porky's and stuff feel like they have a bit of money behind them, Revenge of the Nerds. But this one feels low budget. It feels like they didn't... It feels like you can feel that it's all on one set.
Well, yeah, it's pretty low budget, but I don't think that's what affected me. I just... Like, even the part with we were talking about with Dorfus, like, sneaking into the house and that.
Yeah.
That felt like it was just a ripoff of Animal House to me. You know, when Belushi is up the ladder looking at the girls and stuff. Yeah, it was kind of like that for me.
Yeah.
And then, like, John Grease, I really liked him. I thought he was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was great.
But the main character, Mel, what was his name again?
The nerdy guy?
The nerdy guy.
Eugene?
He annoyed me.
Yeah, he was kind of lame, for sure. Like,
I don't know. This one just did. I love 80s sex comedies, and that's one I just never get the desire to watch. I just didn't really care for it.
Yeah, and I still kind of enjoy it. I actually, you know, paid a little extra to get the Scorpion releasing version, and unfortunately that was a bit of a disappointment. Graydon Clark, it's got to be like one of the most boring commentator people. It's one of the worst commentaries I've ever heard. It was just like 5 minutes of like nothing and then describing with the action.
He's like, in this scene, you see the King
Vidiot. I was really hoping to get a lot of like behind the scenes scoop, and there was pretty much nothing. So that was a disappointment. But the one good thing about the Scorpion version is it does have the original cover, which I always kind of like the cover where it's like two girls playing a video game and then it's like a guy at the bottom, like looking up.
Well, Dorfus.
Is it Dorfus? Yeah,
it's supposed to be Dorfus. But the thing is that I told you about this. This is a modified cover art because it's not the original poster. Because in the original poster, they have the title of the movie, Joysticks, on the screen of the machine, like of the arcade machine. And then the artist had flipped it upside down so that it was supposed to be the reflection. But if you look at it at just the right angle, it looks like it says sucks. So it looks like it says Joystick sucks.
This is a argument Chris and I had. I still don't see it.
It's true. You look at that fucking poster and it says Joystick sucks. If you look at the reflection of the joysticks, it looks like sucks. This is not just me saying this. This is other people have noticed this. So it's, I'm not on my own on this. I'm not just blowing smoke
like,
up your
like
ass.
Me and you're not on your own like me and Dream Warriors.
Yeah. You should be like in the middle of on a raft somewhere, just like waving at people while they're watching and enjoying Dream Warriors. And you'll be like, fuck you. I like Dream Master. And everyone'll be like, no, fuck you. It'd be like a big fight.
Hey, I did put that on Twitter that I like Dream Master better. It's somewhat favorited it.
Well, whatever. Then, you know, maybe you should get on a raft with them and float off somewhere.
Speaking of rafts.
Really? Is there a raft movie?
I also watched Zombievers.
Oh, okay.
From 2014, directed by Jordan Rubin.
I guess that's got rafts on it.
It has a raft in it.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, this was all right. I don't really have a lot to say about this.
So I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's one of these new movies that's trying to like cash in on, or not, I don't know about cash in, but it's trying to like, you know, embrace the charm of like old school effects. And so you've got beavers that turn into zombies, and they're all practical, and it's basically like puppets bouncing around. And just a group of three girls go to a cabin that's by a lake that's been infected by toxic waste that's turned the beavers into zombies. And these girls go to this cabin, they go skinny, well, one of them goes skinny dipping, and it was a nice skinny dipping scene, I might add. And then these guys, three guys show up, so it's like...
That always happens.
The group at the cabin, and then...
Yeah, it's like Slumber Party Massacre, you know, girls try and do something by themselves and bond, and guys come and fuck everything up.
It's true.
That's just the way it goes.
Such is life.
Such is life, you know, guys, you know. We just have that thing. We just have that radar. There's a bunch of girls together. They're going to have a pillow fight and take their tops off. For sure, we better go.
Yeah, exactly. I've done that lots. And yeah, there's always a pillow fight. Yeah. Anyway.
Always. Girls have pillow fights all the time, don't they?
They do. Anyway, I don't really want to say too much about this. You know, it's one of these movies where when I saw the trailer for this movie, I actually thought the trailer was a joke trailer.
Right.
I didn't actually believe that this
was
going to be
a movie. Well, because the practical effects look like they're purposely kind of like crappy.
They do, yeah.
I remember the poster. I really like the poster for it, where it's a takeoff on Jaws, and it's just the silhouettes, and then you, the chick swimming, and she's got her legs open, and the beaver looks like he's swimming right in between her legs.
It's got its moments, right? I mean, there's this one part where this character is like running somewhere. He's running towards a house, and he's like, "You filthy, hairy beaver!" So, I thought that was.
I'm sure there's
funny.
A lot of innuendo jokes in this movie.
There is. Yeah, there is. There's some really good cameos too. That singer John Mayer.
Yeah,
he plays this like redneck, like hillbilly guy, and also with him is Bill Burr, the stand-up comic. They're the drivers of the truck that spills out the toxic waste. I thought that was kind of fun. There, you know, I like the puppets. I like practical effects. Yeah. So I mean, I enjoyed the movie, but I also kind of sometimes when I'm seeing movies like this that are purposely trying to recreate movies that I genuinely do like, where they were actually trying,
mm-hmm.
It rubs me a bit the wrong way sometimes, because it's like, you know, this movie, they were intentionally trying to make it bad.
Right.
Which always kind of, to me, I'm kind of wondering why. I mean, it can work sometimes. And I think it does work for the most part. I thought the cast was a little weak, especially like the main guy. I really wasn't that into him. But yeah, overall, I mean, I'd recommend it. I don't know if I'd recommend buying it, but I'd certainly recommend watching it on Netflix if it came on.
Thanks for telling me that after I've already bought it.
I bought it too, brother. But it's, you know, I don't know if I'll, it's why I really don't think I'll ever watch it again. Right. I mean, even as a gag, I think there's other stuff. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
But it's sat with me for a few weeks and, yeah, I don't know. What else? Yeah, I got lots here, but I guess I'll just mention one more because it's so fresh. Up here in Canada, there's a store called Dollarama.
Oh, Jesus.
And Chris and I have been going a little bananas buying their $2 DVDs.
Yeah, okay, so the story behind this is it's closing in on Halloween, so...
Yeah.
You know, about mid-September, these Dollarama chains start putting out these bins that are just pretty much exclusively horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like $2. So
Canadian.
Yeah. So for your Americans, about 50 cents. So, you know, when we, us kind of people like us who are into movies, we don't give a shit what the movie is. If it's $2, really.
Yeah. As long as it's got a good cover, we or just kind of just remember we like
just kind of buy them. Yeah. We've gone a little bit crazy, I think, this year.
We have. Yes. Yeah. I mean, more than normal.
When you spend like a Saturday going to like $7 or $8 Dollaramas, yeah. You know there's an issue. An issue.
It was like a mission, man, and it was fun. Well, it was a good Saturday.
It's kind of like what you used to do when you used to go to video stores, right?
Yeah, it was kind of like that.
You're like, oh shit, it's all rented at this one. I better go to another video store and see if it's in.
And my girlfriend's like, well, why don't we just call ahead? I'm like, no, you don't understand.
You can't call ahead. It's like a scavenger hunt.
She totally didn't get it.
You don't understand me. We're splitting up.
No, she was like, that's cool. Let's do it. But it's totally true. Like, I totally didn't want to know. It was like the thrill. It brought me back
to
like.
The thing, right? Remember, I went to one by my house. I'm like, I knew the bins were coming out because we had seen them and other people were saying they came out. I go there. I'm like, where's the fucking bin? I'm looking around. There's no bin. I'm like, God damn it. I go back 3 days later. I'm like, where's the bin? Where's the bin? Where's the bin? No bin. I finally go back. I'm like, looking around. And they've got it tucked away in this weird spot in between like Twinkies and fucking chocolate bars. And it's just sitting there. I'm like, oh, it's like there's a glowing light coming off of it. You hear, oh, like heavenly music going. And then I'm just like, motherfucker, this bin is full. I'm in. And I'm like diving in. I'm just throwing titles over my shoulders. I'm like, I want this one and this one and this one. And
it's true. I went to one. It was because I literally did go to like 7 on Saturday. And I went into one. And I saw the bin. And I was so excited. I like went running over to the bin. And it was all fucking kids' movies.
You're like, oh, son of a bitch.
And then I turned around and there was the other bin. Oh, thank God.
So you're like, oh, I don't want no freaking Tupi and Beano or freaking Thomas the Tank Engine.
No.
Maybe if Thomas the Tank Engine's getting decapitated or something.
Anyway, so that's been our nerdy life. But
yeah.
In one of the bins,
yeah.
I did pull out a movie called Bedeviled.
I'd like to know how somehow we got girlfriends, even though we do shit like this.
Especially when it's come with us on the adventure.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right.
So I did pick out a movie called Bedeviled from 2010. This is a South Korean movie.
I'm pretty sure I told you to get that because I said, oh, I heard this is really good.
I think you did, but it also had a really cool cover of like a figure like facing the other direction with a decapitated head in their hand.
Yeah, and a scythe.
Yeah. And it was directed by Chu Si-jung. This is a freaking intense movie, man. Like, this was a drain, but it was awesome. And so it opens up with this woman. She's a real piece of work, like just one of these really kind of mean people that like won't lift a finger to help anyone, and you just don't like this woman right away. Anyway, a few things happen to her, and you know, she's kind of a bitch to all these people, and then she ends up going to this island that I from what I gather, it's maybe an island she grew up on or grew up going to. And she goes to this island, and or her grandfather owned some land there or something. Anyway, she goes to this island, and she meets up with her a childhood friend named Boknam, and Boknam is in kind of a bad situation. She's got a little girl, and she's got a really abusive husband, and like this is a really abusive husband. So, and there's just and the husband's got this brother who's kind of really yucky, gross too, and then all the inhabitants of this island, it's a lot of old women, and they're all kind of really mean to Boknam. Like, it seems like everyone's kind of against Boknam. And anyway, one thing leads to another, and it's like abuse, 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 abuse. So it's very, very, very hard to watch, especially if you find domestic abuse difficult. Mm-hmm. This is a tough, tough watch. But then it gets to a breaking point, and then it turns into this freaking full-on like revenge, not even revenge, it's just like retribution, right, by one of the characters. And again, even this is really hard to watch, but although it's really hard to watch and it's extremely violent, like very violent, it's also incredibly well done. And I know there's been a lot of cool movies kind of coming out of South Korea the last few years, and I haven't really watched a lot of them. I think The Host is like one of the only things I've seen, and I wasn't that into it, but this was incredible. And I definitely want to explore more movies from South Korea. And certainly if you see this in your Dollarama $2 bin, absolutely worth picking up, and probably worth picking up even not. This was a great movie if you're into like pretty intense dramas with some gore and just it actually turned out to be kind of almost a touching story by the end.
Well, it's like, yeah, there's those movies where you're like, you watch it, and while you're watching it, you're like super disturbed.
Yeah.
But by the time it's over, you're like, you realize that you really, really liked it just because of like either the way it was shot or just that the story itself kind of affected you in some way. Like an example of that for me would be like Inside from 2007. Exactly. That's the kind of movie that this kind of reminds me of, where you're watching it, and while you're watching it, you're kind of like, it's messing with you, and you're like kind of, it's getting under your skin really, really a lot. But then by the end of the movie, you're realizing that it's like an emotional drain kind of thing on you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I find that even though I might not revisit a lot of these movies, they're kind of like my favorite things, because it's showing you that the genre itself, like the horror genre itself, doesn't have to be about wisecracking Freddy Krueger.
Exactly.
You know? It doesn't have to be about zombievers. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that kind of thing. It doesn't have to be countless fucking, you know, haunted house movies or anything like that. Like, there can actually be stuff within the genre that does hit you in an emotional core like that. And it's usually the ones that are taking like real life stuff, like, you know, like an Inside, it's about a woman who really, really, really wants to have a baby and then but can't, and then, you know, takes that to a new level that you would never expect a normal human being to take it to. And that's kind of like this one, right? Like, you know, domestic abuse, not a laughing matter, something that happens way too much. Yeah. And you know, and this is something where you're probably watching the movie at the beginning, and you're like thinking, well, this guy's horrible, I want him to get his comeuppance anyway, right?
Yeah.
But then when the stuff does start happening, you're probably thinking to yourself, I haven't seen the movie, so I'm just guesstimating here, right? Like, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, this person's not much better for this retribution they're taking on either, really.
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't agree with that. But
like, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie,
another,
like I
well,
said.
Well, another interesting thing about the movie was that the character, that the one that you're sort of following from the beginning, the character of Hai Wan is her name, and she's the one that's kind of bitchy at the beginning. She's almost like victim shaming through the whole movie because this is her friend, and every time she's seeing anything going on, she's like turning away or getting away from it, and just that whole thing, like she just refuses to help. And you know, that whole thing was just also quite horrifying. It was almost as horrifying mm-hmm. as the violence, and you're just watching this other woman just getting like beaten down so hard, and it was quite an incredible experience. And yeah, I mean, I highly recommend this one. And it's not exploitative. Like, it's not like Last House on the Left or something like that, where, you know, it feels a little more like exploitation. Like, this didn't feel like exploitation to me at all. It just felt like it was showing how it was there and what was up. And you were just along for the ride. And then by the end, yeah, you're just kind of tired, but kind of exhilarated in a weird way as well.
Right.
So, yeah. Anyway, totally recommend this one.
Cool.
So, your turn.
My turn. I'm going to gloss over mine really quick so we can get on with the topic here. Because, you know, two of them...
We spent too much time arguing about Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Two of them are kind of like just, you know, ones I wasn't given much of an impression of, to be honest. One of them is a movie called 13 Eerie, which is a Canadian production from director Lowell Dean, who... now has a little bit more recognition because he recently directed Wolf Cop, which everybody seems to know. And I mean, I have Wolf Cop sitting at home and I haven't watched it yet because I'm a little it's another one of those like Zombievers kind of situations, yeah. Right? Where seems like they're trying really hard to be self-referential and like make a horror comedy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to feel forced. I'm hoping not when I actually get around to watching it. But 13 Eerie is just another one of those like, let's cash in on the zombie craze kind of thing. Where it's a bunch of like forensic students going to this island where there's a penitentiary on it called, I think it's called like Eerie Island Penitentiary.
Sounds eerie.
And yeah. And it turns out, you know, this was a where they did experiments on the actual inmates. And, you know, they have all these dead inmates just lying around the island for some reason. And they come back as zombies and start attacking everyone. So the first half of the movie is kind of them like getting bitched at by their teacher because they have to figure out these crime scenes and that. And then the second half is just like zombies attacking like relentlessly through the whole movie. And you'd think that might be kind of cool, but I was fucking bored.
Yeah, man, you're not selling me on it
like,
at
I'm
all.
I'm just sitting there. Well, I'm not trying to.
Yeah, it sounds lame.
I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I'm kind of bored. Like, you know... all this stuff I've seen zombies do in other movies. Like, oh no. Oh, she just stuck a zombie to a wall with a knife. Oh, now she has to climb on the roof of the building because the zombies are coming after her. Oh, they're in a school bus and the zombies are attacking the school bus. What are they going to do? Oh, they have to get to the boat so they can escape the island. Never seen that before.
You know,
the only redeeming factors were the makeup effects were kind of good. There's a little bit of gore that was kind of cool. And Catherine Isabel from Ginger Snaps.
Yeah.
Was one of the lead actresses in it. I actually, and American Mary she was in.
But she's starting to be in everything,
and
too.
And I actually kind of liked her in it. I thought she was pretty good.
Yeah.
That's the only redeeming factor for me was that she was pretty good in it. But otherwise, I thought it was just a wash. I'm fucking sick of zombie movies.
Yeah.
There's just so
Walking
many.
Walking Dead's really killed it, too.
I'm tired of them.
Yeah.
I just would wish they would just, you know, let it be for a while. Let's move on to the next thing.
When did this movie come out?
It's 2013, so it's
and
not that old.
Did you watch it on Netflix or something?
No, dude. Library.
Oh, so it's out on disc.
Yeah. Library is a good source for stuff like this, especially if it's Canadian. They seem to get any Canadian movie at the library.
No, dude. Library, man.
Dude. Library. Who needs Netflix, man, when you go library? The next movie I watched was one that had been sitting on my shelf at home forever. It's one of those ones where, you know, it's one of these Dollarama situations. Hey, it's $2. Come home with me. 3 years, 4 years later, I think I'll watch this so I can give it away.
Yeah.
And it was 2006 is The Return, starring Sarah Michelle Gellar. Now, this movie is a fucking deceiver of a movie because you look at that cover art, and it's got like this... zombie-looking face or ghost-looking face with a glossed-over, like, cataract-looking eye.
Yeah.
With a reflection in it. And you're like, oh, this is going to be like one of those, you know, grudgy-type movies.
Like
and,
J-horror.
Yeah, kind of like that, right? Not at all.
Really?
It was more like a murder mystery.
Okay.
So it has her coming home to the town she left to do, like, I think she's trying to broker some sort of a deal because she's, like, a hot shot, like, property person. And she comes home to her dad, who's played by Sam Shepard, of all people.
Okay.
And
he's always good.
She ends up kind of, like, getting involved in this mystery where she's, like, she starts seeing all these visions where she's, like, living the life of this girl who was murdered. And she has to try and figure out, you know, who did the killing and that. And she gets involved with people in the town. And, you know, it's a really bleak kind of like, it's a shitty looking town because it's all gray and washed out, which is intentional from the director's point of view. Like, you could tell they did this on purpose.
Right.
But it just wasn't that interesting. I just,
yeah.
You know, when I was going in expecting a supernatural horror movie and then I just got this kind of like nonsensical like murder mystery where the plot threads didn't quite click together like they should have. I just wasn't that interested in it. I just, you know, I just wanted to tell people not to bother with it.
So I won't even bother with the Castaway copy of yours.
Yeah, no, I'm not giving it to you. It's going in a donation bin.
What if I wanted it?
Well, too bad.
I have too much stuff.
Yeah, you just bought like 40 movies. You don't need anything else. Another one I watched, which we talked about on our Mad Scientist episode, so I'm not going to go much into it, is I watched The Man with Two Brains.
Oh, so fun. Because
I was like, I have to revisit this bad boy. It was on the movie channel. I was like, oh, this is Steve Martin in his prime, right? This is like the jerk.
Can you say the doctor's name?
He's basically a brain surgeon who falls in love with a brain in a jar, voiced by Sissy Spacek, while his conniving wife, Kathleen Turner, who is probably with this and body double, it's the hottest she's probably looked in a movie.
Body heat.
When
she's wearing that see-through nightie, that's pretty awesome.
That's probably the hottest she's looked in a movie. It's her first two movies because these were her first two movies: Body Heat and Man with Two Brains. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, it's a mad science. It just makes fun of mad scientist movies a lot. There's a lot of like silly jokes in it. It's got the best use of Merv Griffin I've ever seen in my life.
It's pretty awesome.
And I still laugh at that scene no matter what.
Yeah.
And it's got your typical Steve Martin. Like in this, when he was co-writing these movies with Carl Reiner, he just threw in like these silly like little dance numbers or like he just threw in these like running jokes. Like in The Jerk, he had those like, he's got no rhythm and he's trying to play the spoons on the porch and screwing up. And this one had kind of jokes like that too. Like, I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny. And
I love when he's like trying to get laid and he like goes to like go out the door and like his boner like smashes.
What it is Kathleen Turner was like stringing him along.
Yeah.
Because they just got married, but she wouldn't give up the goods. So he's getting sexually frustrated, right? So she like one day he comes home and that's when she's wearing that see-through nightie.
Yeah.
And she's like saying to him, oh, we're going to finally get to do it or whatever, right? And he's getting all excited in that. She's like, next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then he goes over to the window and he's all frustrated and all he hears the crashing of the glass because his boner bus broke the glass and then he hangs his hat on
He like drops his hat.
It's pretty funny.
Super funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So if you like Steve Martin, these are like, this and The Jerk are like the choice movies to see of his when he was first getting into the movies. I like him and Carl Reiner actually made a pretty good team.
Well, this is kind of a riff on the brain that wouldn't die too. I think.
That's totally mad scientist riffing for sure. And the last thing I want to mention real quick here is I watched the original 1958 Blob.
Okay.
Since we were talking about the remake.
Nice.
And I hadn't seen it in a while. I got the Criterion disc from the library.
Yeah, I own that one. That's
I got
one.
It from the library. Gosh. So I hadn't seen it in a while. It's really kind of a fun little 50s low-budget sci-fi movie. It's basically about this gelatinous mass that looks like strawberry jello coming to Earth and then attacking a small town. And Steve McQueen's one of like the teenagers, although he looks like 35 in the movie, really.
Yeah, he's so awesome.
Who like has to try and team up to stop the blob with like the sheriff and everything. And there's some cool little set pieces in it, like, you know, the drive-in, the movie theater scene, which is really famous.
Classic,
And, you know, the part near the finale in the diner, and it's just...
Yeah, it's great.
The effects are, like, forced perspective, just like, you know, they don't look great by today's standards, but it's still a fun movie. It's fun to watch. Like, I really like when the old guy, when the meteor comes down first and he's poking it with the stick, and then he gets it, it all crawls up his hand.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really cool shot for, like, a 50s horror movie. Like, yeah. It looks really cool. And it was just, it's a fun movie. Lots of, like, miniatures that were kind of, like... mildly convincing, but you know, I'm giving this movie the benefit of the doubt because it's a low budget film from
the 50s.
Was
it the 50s or 1960s? 50s. Yeah.
Yeah, 1958.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites of that era.
Yeah, but I actually honestly prefer the 1988 remake.
Yeah, I haven't seen that so long.
With Chuck Russell, who directed Nightmare 3, made it.
Ugh, great.
And I actually like the remake, but I think I like the remake because it's my generation's Blob. You know, it's a lot more like special effects heavy, and it's also a lot more like the kills are pretty awesome in it.
Yeah.
Like I really love the 88 Blob, but the 58 Blob, if you haven't seen it and you're willing to dive into older movies like that are, you know, from that decade, definitely check out the Blob. It's worth it.
I find it more accessible. Like a lot of people get scared off by the older, oh, it's in black and white, oh no.
No,
but I find the Blob and Creature from the Black Lagoon both quite accessible to people that maybe aren't.
Blob isn't black and white either, so.
Isn't it?
No, it's in color.
Oh, wow.
And then also in the Blob, it's got that awesome Burt Bacharach opening song. Beware of the Blob.
Oh,
it
yeah,
creeps
yeah.
and sneaks and freaks. Awesome.
Yeah.
Plus in this 1972, they made a sequel called Beware the Blob, directed by none other than Larry Hagman, who played JR on the TV show Dallas in the 80s. I've never seen it, but now that I've watched the original Blob, I'm definitely going to try and check that one out.
Right on.
And that's it. So okay. Let's talk about bugs.
All right.
Let's talk about bugs, baby. Yeah, I did some salt and
really?
Pepper for you. Salt and pepper. I had to do it, man.
Why?
I don't know.
That had nothing to do with bugs.
Just get on your raft out there. Fucking dream master loving son of a bitch.
Maybe someone will agree with me and I won't be alone.
Maybe. Or maybe you'll just be in the shower singing all by myself. Who knows?
How do you know I do that?
I could tell. You smell nice, but you look lonely. So let's talk about killer insect
movies. I don't own any ferns, man.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about killer insect movies here. We had a topic before where we kind of dived into the nature gone amok stuff.
Dove.
Did I say dive? We kind of dive.
You said dive.
We kind of dive into it. You know what I'm saying?
No, Muff Too Tough. We dive at five.
Jesus.
Remember that Bruce Dickinson song?
Yes, yes, yes. So we decided to tackle insects this time, which if you kind of like... For me, the start of insect movies was the 1950s, right?
Yep.
Because this is when they became really prevalent. This is when there was so many giant bug movies that I lost track. When I was making this list even, I was just like, my God, there's so many of these. Like, I didn't realize there were so many. And most of it had to do with, like, the atomic scare at the time. Because, you know, at the time, everyone was afraid of Russia dropping an atomic bomb on the United States, or the effects of the atomic bomb would mutate everything. And the first one I remember seeing was Them from 1954.
Yep.
Which was atomic mutated giant ants.
Yep.
And this is still actually a really fun movie. I've seen it maybe 5 years ago, and it's really fun. There's like the big standoff at the end with the flamethrowers and the giant ants and everything. And have you seen Them? It's pretty...
I saw Them when... Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember... You know, I mean, a lot of these movies I saw when I was a kid with my dad on Sunday's sci-fi theater.
That's totally what this movie is, though. It's the kind of movie you should be watching on, like, a Sunday afternoon with your dad. It's like... It's just a fun little movie. It doesn't take itself seriously. And giant ants, what more do you need out of life, right?
Yeah.
And then around the same time, I remember there was a giant tarantula movie, oddly enough, called Tarantula.
Yeah.
Which is directed by Jack Arnold, who also did Creature from the Black Lagoon. And he also did The Incredible Shrinking Man a couple years later, which had the main actor fighting an oversized spider because he was an incredible shrinking man.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of funny that they had, like, he made two movies with these tarantula spiders in them. But yeah. Tarantula is also kind of a fun little movie if you don't take it seriously, because it's just a giant tarantula rampaging through the city.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that one was another mutated by atomic testing kind of deal. Yeah, it was.
I mean, I do remember liking Tarantula. This is probably one of my favorites of that era.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why. I mean, John Agar was in this, and I remember him. He was in tons of these movies.
Yeah, he was in, like, the Brain from Planet Eros, I think, yeah. Wasn't he?
He's been, like a lot of those Mystery Science Theater fans will probably recognize John Agar.
Yeah.
He was also in some Eastwood movies, or not Eastwood. I'm going to talk about Eastwood in a second, but he was in some John Wayne movies. I really remember him from Sands of Iwo Jima, and he was also in Fort Apache. So you got to start with John Wayne and then sort of got into B movies. But yeah, Clint Eastwood's also in this movie as a fighter pilot, the one that takes out the tarantula at the end. So a lot of forced perspective of the tarantula, and I thought this was pretty fun, you know. Definitely one of the better, I think, of that time period.
Yeah, another one that I really like from around this time is also the Deadly Mantis.
Yeah.
Which is another giant creature, but it's a praying mantis in this one. And I've never seen any other insect movie that uses a praying mantis as its creature.
No, and it's a great creature to use.
And it looks really cool because, you know, praying mantises are creepy ass looking anyway.
Yeah.
And to have a giant one with the, you know, praying mantises, they eat their mates. The female eats the mate.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're already, like, kind of messed up and, like,
and they got just that weird creepy face looking. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was directed by Nathan Jurien.
Yeah. Jurien,
who made Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
And The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
And, yes, I was about to bring up The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. He also did 20 Million Miles to Earth, which is another Ray Harryhausen special effects movie.
So he definitely has experience with effects and, you know, making a cool monster movie.
Yeah,
so
I thought that one was pretty fun, but just a couple other ones I want to quickly talk about from the 50s, and then you can throw in any if you have any.
Sure.
Is there was one called Black Scorpion.
Yeah.
Which was a giant scorpion movie. We see a trend here. Yep. I've never personally seen it, but, you know, the only other, I can't think of many other movies that have scorpions in them. There will be a couple that come up as we go along, but this was probably the first of those. And
there was a scorpion in one of the Sinbad movies too.
Was there?
Yeah, okay. Like a giant scorpion, but it's a cool idea for a giant creature.
Yeah. And then two ones I want to quickly talk about is Attack of the Giant Leeches from 1959.
Yeah.
Not a great movie by any stretch of the word, but when you have a movie where the giant leeches are generally basically just guys in trash bags with suckers glued onto the front of them, menacing a small redneck podunk town.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's like 60 minutes long. By the time you're like thinking to yourself, this is stupid, it's already finished.
Exactly.
And another one was just that I think is significant is a movie called Beginning of the End from 1957. And this is a giant grasshopper movie.
Really?
And it's significant because it's directed by Burt I. Gordon, the master of making these giant whatever movies, you know, War of the Colossus, Beast, and, you know, or sorry, Amazing Colossal Man, and
War of the Colossal Beast.
War
sequel,
of the Colossal Beast, which is a sequel, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's that one? Village of the
Giants.
Village of the Giants.
Yeah.
The Puppet People. He did all the effects for all his movies too.
Yeah.
And it's obvious in this one that all he basically did was make a city out of cardboard and threw real grasshoppers on it and stuff.
Well, you know what his initials are?
Big.
Yeah.
That's, you know, go big or go home, I guess. But he'll be mentioned later too, but I think that one's worthy of bringing up because it's a killer grasshopper movie.
Absolutely.
Is there any other killer grasshopper movies?
I don't think so.
There's just so many 50s ones, but those are the ones I wrote down that I wanted to mention. Do you have any other 50s ones you want to bring up?
Just a couple more. I've got another Burt I. Gordon one, Earth versus a Spider.
Yeah.
From 1958.
Which was actually remade in 2001.
It was, with Dan Aykroyd and that Devin Gummersall from the My So-Called Life. I also thought we should bring up The Fly because it's The Fly. But we've already talked about
we've talked about The Fly in the Mad Scientist episode, so that's why I didn't really.
Yeah,
I kind of was gonna gloss those over anyway when I lumped it with Cronenberg's.
Yeah, I just to be completed, it certainly is a giant monster,
insect
bug movie.
Yeah,
another one would be Wasp Woman from 1959, directed by Roger Corman, where a woman. that's running a cosmetics company decides to extract the royal jelly from bees mm-hmm. and inject it into herself to like remain young, and then ends up turning into a giant wasp. So that's
a
pretty
wasp
cool.
Woman. Hmm? A wasp,
the wasp woman. The wasp woman. So this was remade in 1996 with Jim Wynorski directing, starring Jennifer Rubin. It was actually, there was another riff on this too, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. But yeah, I think that's pretty much all the big ones I think we should mention from
Jennifer
the 50s.
Rubin from Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Yes. And The Crush.
I'm gonna keep hounding you about this the rest of
it's not gonna I'm not gonna nothing's gonna make me like Dream Warrior, sorry.
So what we did, because there's so many of these, like when I started doing research for this topic, I was like, there's so many goddamn insect movies.
Well, we covered the main ones, right? Yeah, of that era. Like, but what, even not in that era, there's so many.
But
yeah.
I mean, there's so many in general.
Oh yeah.
So ridiculous. What I did was I just wrote down a bunch of titles that I wanted to bring up.
Yep.
I thought we could go back to the whole let's throw titles at each other and see where it goes.
Sure.
So like, you know, maybe we can bounce off each other on certain things. And then at the end, I thought we could just do maybe talk about ones we wanted to see that we haven't seen. And then we could talk about movies that aren't particularly insect movies, but have a specific scene in them or scenes that have to do with insects that are very like memorable.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about that.
So we'll do that for sure. So why don't I start off? And the first movie I actually wrote down was Starship Troopers.
That's awesome.
Because you can't have an insect movie without talking about Starship Troopers, the 1997 Paul Verhoeven classic.
Yeah.
And I use the term classic loosely because the problem with Starship Troopers is the main actors in it, Casper Van Dien and Denise Richards, are horrible.
Right.
They're bad actors. But the thing about that is...
poor Casper.
They suck. They suck in this movie, okay?
You haven't seen him play James Dean.
I don't think I want to see him play James Dean. But the thing is, it doesn't matter that they suck because it's 2 hours of, you know, alien insects running around attacking Marines who look like they're ripped straight out of the Aliens movies and sticking them with their pincers and stuff. And there's all these like commercials going on TVs, like these satirical commercials, which goes back to Verhoeven's RoboCop.
Yeah.
With the same kind of satirical jabs at like the government and like the military and all that. And I just had a lot of fun with Starship Troopers. I remember seeing it in theaters and coming out of it just jazzed. I was like,
yeah,
that was so much fun. And my actual favorite thing about Starship Troopers is Clancy Brown. He's a character. He's a very, very memorable looking character actor. You would know him. And he played like kind of the drill sergeant when they first...
Right, yeah.
We're in line, and he has that big scene where he's like, is yelling at them, kind of like Arlie Ermey did in Full Metal Jacket. He's getting in their faces and everything, and he throws a knife into Jake Busey's hand and pins his hand to the thing. I'm like, that guy's awesome.
Yeah.
Clancy Brown, you're the man. Because I had just come off of seeing him in Pet Sematary 2,
yeah,
where I also thought he was the best thing in Pet Sematary 2, which wasn't that hard to do, to be honest with you.
He was the bad guy in Highlander as well, right?
I think, yeah, he was the main bad guy in Highlander.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's really cool. He's like, he plays that asshole to a hilt.
He does.
And it's got really cool gore in it, Starship Troopers. And it's got like earlier CGI. Like it's some CGI, but it wasn't cloying CGI like it is these days.
I haven't seen it since around when it came out, so I don't know. Does it hold up now?
It's pretty fun, man. It's still pretty fun.
Ironside's in it too.
Michael Ironside, hell yeah. Any movie with Michael Ironside is worth the price of admission.
Well,
almost.
After Dollarama, we'll see about that.
Yeah, you got about four of them, didn't you?
I did.
But the thing is with Starship Troopers is that is a definition of a popcorn movie.
Yes.
Like, you know, we were talking about how, you know, Matt was saying on that past episode about...
I don't know if Matt was saying it was a popcorn movie, but that was the vibe I was getting.
That's the gist, of it. This is a popcorn movie. This is a movie where you do not want to go in without your brain shut off. Mm-hmm. If you go into that looking for logic or looking for that, you're going to hate it.
Exactly.
They made two sequels to this that went direct to video.
Right.
And they also made a computer animated TV show.
Did they really?
Roughnecks, that I've never seen, that focused more on the Marines.
So has there only been two sequels? I always thought there was more sequels.
No, there's only two?
Two. Okay.
There's only two. And I didn't care for the sequels, but I wanted to bring up Starship Troopers because I think it's a fun insect movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's... The thing about it, I realized when I was writing down my list of all these insect movies is most of them are just really fun.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, you know, everyone's like, you know, you're in your house, you're like, oh, I got a fucking spider. Oh, kill it, kill it, kill it. You know, oh, I'm being attacked by mosquitoes when I'm out in the woods. I hate mosquitoes, you know, and that's the thing is like, that's why I think they're fun because you're like, they're already nuisances and menaces in real life.
Menaces.
That to have them like... What's funny about menaces?
Well, they're not really menaces. They're just
well,
icky.
Mosquitoes are menaces.
I don't know, man. I've like been looking at so many spiders this week. I'm like terrified of them right now.
So, I just thought I'd bring up Starship Troopers.
That's a great one.
Yeah,
that's a great one to kick things off with.
For sure. What do you got?
All right. Well, just because we were just talking about Wasp Woman, I'm going to get this one out of the way. So, I wanted to bring up Evil Spawn from 1987 because this is. Pretty much a remake of Wasp Woman as well. Directed by, depending on how you look at it, it was directed by Kenneth J. Hall, directed Evil Spawn. And then it was also redone again by Ted Newsome, who took some of the footage from Evil Spawn and cut in a whole bunch of other footage to make it another movie called Alien Within. But Evil Spawn's the one I'd recommend, the Kenneth J. Hall one. So this comes from like the 1987. So this is right in the prime time of like Fred Olen Ray, Jim Wynorski creature features, and stars Bobby Breese from Ghoulies and Mausoleum as a aging cosmetics person, she's an aging actress, like a scream queen, who's trying to stay young. So then she is given this serum by this mysterious woman, played by Dawn Wildsmith, and told to inject it. And then eventually, over the course of the movie, she ends up turning into a giant bug and killing people. But I've always had a soft spot for this movie. It's right in there with all the other kind of classics of that era. It features some pretty cool special effects. There's a lot of nudity, in particular a skinny dipping scene from Pamela Gilbert. Thank you very much. And, it's got that silly comedy. You've got your little John Carradine stock footage that's been reused like 100 times. And it's a fun little movie. So if you are a fan of like Wasp Women or people turning into monster movies, or people turning into insects, this is a pretty fun one. And it's kind of overlooked, I find, quite a bit of the time.
Yeah, I saw it when I was a kid, but I don't really remember anything about it. Yeah. I just remember it's like super low budget looking.
It's super low budget, but it's got a neat creature. It's got a couple of good gore scenes, and it's really cheesy. So I mean, if you're looking for like a really good movie, not the way to go.
Didn't Kenneth J. Hall also have a hand in the effects in this movie?
I'm sure he did. I mean,
he's done effects for a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, going off of like people mutating from like insects, I wanted to quickly bring up 1992's Ticks.
Okay.
Directed by Tony Randall, who made the second Hellraiser movie that everyone seems to love except for me and Josh. But we were talking about that
today.
Thank
God we agree on that one.
Yeah, we were talking about that today, how we don't like Hellbound Hellraiser 2, but that's another story.
Yeah, so and, I'm further out of my raft.
This one stars Amy Dolenz, daughter of the Monkees, Mickey Dolenz.
Yep.
And I used to think she was super hot in the 90s. Like when she was in this and she's out of control with Tony Danza and all that, I was like, she's so hot. But in this one, she's in a small town and there's ticks that basically start attacking the townsfolk. And I haven't seen it in a while, but I do remember a scene in it where Clint Howard, good old Clint Howard, playing the typical town weirdo like he always does, gets bitten by the ticks and he just starts mutating and it's really gross looking.
Wow.
Like he gets all these pus bowls on him and everything and he just looks really nasty.
So does he turn into a tick?
I think he might. It's been a really long time since I've seen it, but I just remember it's got a lot of really gooey looking effects in it. Right. And I just thought it was a really fun movie. And I keep looking to get the Blu-ray, which came out from Olive Films, but it's always a little bit too far out of my price range because it's gone out of print. So I see people trying to sell it for like $90. I'm not willing to pay $90 on a movie like that when I'm not even sure if I'd still like it.
Right.
But I just wanted to bring it up because that image of Clint Howard just covered with those boils and everything, I still remember it to this day.
Yeah, insect movies are icky. Well, that movie also had an early appearance from Seth Green.
Okay.
And it had Alfonso Ribeiro.
Oh, Alfonso Ribeiro from Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
Of Bel-Air.
Carlton.
Yeah. Do the Carlton, everybody.
Well, I mean, I guess another...
Josh, that's how you could get friends. You could do the Carlton while you're on your app.
I have friends.
No, you don't. Not anymore.
Wow. Okay, so another mutating person into a bug movie isn't really a movie, but I just wanted to bring up the Masters of Horror episode Sick Girl from 2006, directed by Lucky McKee.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite episode of that series.
Yeah, it's a good episode. Stars Angela Bettis and Misty Monday, a.k.a. Aaron Brown. And Aaron Brown, I can't remember what the storyline is, but I just know she eventually turns into a bug. And it's got some cool effects. And, yeah, it's definitely one of the better episodes of the disappointing Masters of Horror series. But, yeah, definitely one of the high points of that series.
That series is disappointing now when you look back at it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't held up too well.
It was absolutely totally disappointing. I did get to be on set for this one. I got to have a set visit when they were filming Sick Girl, and that was pretty cool. And there was all kinds of actual live bugs there that you could, well, I couldn't, but that they were going to be used in the production. So there were like tarantulas that people were holding and stuff, and yeah, all that stuff really cool.
Did you get to see Misty Monday?
Yeah, I was standing right beside her and Angela Bettis. And, yeah, it was pretty cool. Misty Monday, she was in it. Aaron Brown, she was in a, she was just in a robe. But I couldn't believe how short she was. She was very short.
Yeah, you go up to him. You got Angela Bettis on one side. You got Misty Monday on the other, a.k.a. Aaron Brown. And you're like, you put your arms around their shoulders. You're like, hey. You look at Angela Bessel, you scared the shit out of me. You look at it, you look at the other one, you're like, I've jerked off. Jesus.
I really wish that, you know, it's another one of those times where I really wish I had had a camera with me and had the balls to use it. But yeah, well, that was pretty neat. And then I also got to meet Howard Berger on that set, which is pretty awesome. So that's, I'm totally name dropping, aren't I?
I just can't believe I just said that. Sorry, everybody.
anyway, check out Sick Girl, one of the better Masters of Horror episodes, and it's got a good transformation sequence, courtesy of K&B. So,
yeah.
So that would be my next pick.
So I want to talk about the one that I watched leading up to this episode. I had this plan where I was going to watch a bunch of them before.
Yeah, me too. We always recorded, do, don't we?
And then I watched one.
Yeah.
And it was 1976's Squirm.
Right.
Which was written and directed by Jeff Lieberman, who has actually got... He hasn't made a lot of movies, but no. He's known for like making Just Before Dawn, which is considered...
You had to bring up Jeff Lieberman, didn't you?
Yeah. It's considered to be one of the better 80s slasher movies. He also made a movie called Satan's Little Helper, which Josh and I have been scouring Dollaramas for, because we saw somebody else got it at a Dollarama recently, the bastard. And... He also made Blue Sunshine, which is kind of like a weird LSD kind of hippie-ish. I'm not quite sure what that movie is.
It's just a weird...
It's like a trippy kind of...
psychedelic thriller.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them. And the thing about Squirm is it's the only... One of the few movies I can think of where it's killer earthworms.
Yeah.
Because what happens is this small Georgia town, there's a big raging storm that knocks the power lines into the dirt, electrifies the worms, and makes them crave human flesh.
Yeah.
And there's some pretty cool scenes early on where they used real footage of worms, like pulling back their outer layers and looking like they're screaming while they have this horrible noise going on the soundtrack. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's creepy as hell. Because you like when you think of worms, you're just like, whatever, they're just worms. But seeing that, you're like, oh, It's kind of nasty, right? But it's basically follows this family who live out in the middle of nowhere, and they're visited by this guy from the city who's like been kind of corresponding with the youngest daughter. And when he comes to visit, they find like this skeleton. So he starts doing all this Scooby-Doo like sleuthing, you know, trying to figure out where's the skeleton from? What's it all about? But at the same time, the townsfolk are getting attacked by these worms who are like, you know, carnivorous now. And there's some really cool stuff in the second half of this movie. Like, I found the lead into the movie is kind of slowish because I didn't give a shit that this guy was trying to track down who this skeleton was. Like,
yeah,
you just had to give him an ascot and call him Freddy and be done with it, right? But he, in the second half, when the worms decide to do full-on attacks, there's some really cool stuff. Like, there's that whole shower scene, like, psych-out, where she, like, goes and turns on the nozzle, and you see the worms come slowly sliding out of the shower nozzle.
Yeah.
And then when she turns the water off and looks up at them, they're back inside, so she didn't see them.
Yeah.
And then there's like just this whole scene at the end with like a tidal wave of worms where the guy gets sucked under them. That was really cool. Like, there's some cool scenes in this movie. And
there's
that
guy like down by the water or something, like on a
boat. Yeah, he's on the boat and he gets them all like attached to his face and they're burrowing into
him. That's pretty cool.
Like, the actual horror scenes in this movie are really cool.
Yeah.
But I just found that there was just too much dead space in between it to raise it really above the level it should have been on. And I hate to admit this because I never want to say that I'm not happy I didn't buy a Scream Factory product. But I'm glad I decided to just watch my old DVD rather than spend the money on the Blu-ray because I don't feel like it's worth it. It's entertaining, right, but it's not one of those ones that I want to revisit.
I remember one of the posters for this was really cool, though.
It was, like a hand-drawn one with all this, like, it had a skull in the middle and then all these worms all over it and all these people on the outside like that were getting pulled into it and everything. Yeah, like that's a really wicked poster.
It's a really cool poster. Yeah. Cool. So that's Squirm. I guess if we're going to talk about worms, we should probably talk about Tremors.
Of course.
My favorite.
This is my favorite movie of all the ones we're going to talk about.
Really? Well, you can maybe you should talk about it a little more because I haven't seen it in a long time. And but it's a great movie from the 80s.
1990.
Or 1990, starring Kevin Bacon and Michael Gross.
And Fred Ward.
And Fred Ward, directed by Ron Underwood.
Yep. And it's set in Perfection, Nevada.
Yep.
And Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward are
kind of like... Oh, Reba McEntire.
Yeah, she's in it, too.
The country singer, yeah.
Yeah, Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon play these kind of, like, lazy kind of handymen. And they live in this town, Perfection, and it's really... It's just like a town of, like, 30 people tops, probably. It's in the middle of the desert. And, you know, life seems to be normal, but then all of a sudden they spot, like, this guy up in a tower... Like in a hydro tower, and they're like, what the hell's going on, right? They go up there and the guy's dead. And they're like, well, what's he doing in this tower? And they soon find out that like there's these giant worms living under the sand that are attracted by vibrations. So eventually this causes, you know, the worms start attacking the town. And it's just the perfect mix, this movie, of like comedy and these really cool scenes of these giant worms just popping out of the ground and like attacking people. They're called graboids by the director. And it's just, when you don't have Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward's characters like arguing with each other and they have this really great chemistry together, you've got country singer Reba McEntire and Michael Gross from Family Ties playing these like gun-obsessed, like rednecks, basically,
who
have like in their basement, they have like this whole just wall of guns that they use to fight these worms that are trying to bust into their house. And they're really funny. And Michael Gross actually is going to played the character again in all the sequels.
There's three sequels.
There's three sequels and there's a fourth one coming.
Yeah, I heard that. Is that even going to get a theatrical release?
Maybe? I didn't hear that, but I know it's coming, and it stars Jamie Kennedy. Oh, boy. And they also spun this off to a TV show that I never saw.
Yeah.
But I love Tremors. I just think Tremors is the perfect balance of comedy and horror here. And, like, the worms are kind of... They're not really that menacing, to be honest, because they're kind of ridiculous because they're just these giant worms. But I just have so much fun when I watch that movie. Every time I put it on, I'm just like, I just smile to myself through the whole thing.
Yeah. It's one I definitely need to revisit. I mean, I haven't seen it for a long time, probably since around when it came out. But I haven't seen any of the sequels, but just even talking about it and thinking about it makes me want to check it out again.
It's definitely a movie that's got that cult following.
Yeah.
And it definitely deserves it because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't see a lot of these. We're not going to be talking about a lot of these kind of like, you know, slithery kind of insects, right? Like, you know, that's a worm movie. Apart from that, Squirm's the only other worm movie I could think of. You know, there's,
aside from like those giant worms in Dune, but
yeah, and
it's
like
not really a worm,
you know,
movie.
And like those like shitty movies from like the 2000s, like Mongolian death worm and stuff like that. You know, like whatever.
Yeah,
you know. But another one that's kind of like that is let's talk about Slugs a little bit.
Yeah,
because I have a couple of Slugs movies, and one of them is Slugs the movie,
which is pretty fun.
It's like a 1987 Spanish movie.
Yeah.
Directed by Juan Piquer Simon.
Yeah.
J.P. Simon, he likes to bill himself as. He made this movie after this called The Rift, which was a total ripoff of Leviathan and Deep Star 6, which is kind of fun with Ari Lehrmy, but this one's more fun.
Yeah.
This one's actually based on a novel, if you can believe it.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I knew that.
Yeah, it's based on a novel. And it's your typical thing. Slugs get hungry for human blood and attack people. But this being a non-American movie, this is gory as shit. Like, there's an awesome scene where the guy's like in his greenhouse and the slug gets caught in his clothing and just fucking eats him inside out. It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Slugs is awesome, and it's like total exploitation. Like, there's nudity all over the place, and it's pretty gory. I always remember that scene where they're in the bedroom and they're like, the slugs are just sort of surrounding the bed.
It's
a fun one.
It's pretty ridiculous.
I think there's a shower scene as well.
Oh, probably.
I have to watch this one again.
I think we should sit down and watch Slugs.
That's the key.
You have Slugs?
I have it on DVD somewhere, yeah.
You'll have to dig it out, and we'll have to check it out. Because it's been a while, but I just know it's super ridiculous and super over the top.
Yeah.
And another one that's super ridiculous and over the top that has slugs, but is even more awesome, is Slither.
Right.
From 2006. Directed by James Gunn, who, of course, went on to big fame making Guardians of the Galaxy last year.
Yeah.
And Slither is awesome because it's like Michael Rooker co-stars.
Yep.
Nathan Fillion from Firefly is in this. And it's another one of those small towns being attacked by these like slug creatures. I think they're from space. I think it's the setup is the whole...
It's some sort of alien connection.
The typical setup of like the meteor coming to Earth. And then Michael Rooker's character, who's kind of like a jerk, he gets infected by them.
Yeah.
And he starts becoming really strange. Like, he has a filing cabinet where he files cuts of meat in alphabetical order because he's obsessed with eating meat. Like, the slug wants him to just, that's infesting him, just wants him to eat meat all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got a filing cabinet. He's like, oh, prosciutto. I really like prosciutto and stuff. And that's just part of the humor in it. Like, this movie's just over the top fun too. Like, there's the scene with the girl in the bathtub where you see all the slugs kind of slithering towards the bathtub, wanting to go in the water and everything. And, you know, it's the first time I remember seeing Elizabeth Banks, because she plays like kind of Michael Rooker's wife. She's like the younger wife, but I thought she was really cute in this and really fun. And Nathan Fillion, he's awesome in this movie.
He's the sheriff or something.
He's the sheriff, and he's so awesome. Like, he's pretty much awesome in everything, though.
Yeah.
He's just
Seen Castle yet, but
he's just got this really sarcastic, like smirky streak to him that he brings to all of his roles. And like, I think this is like the first time I remember seeing him apart from maybe like Dr. Horrible's sing along blog.
Was this post Firefly, right?
No, it was after.
Yeah, after post.
It was after, post. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not pre, sorry. I had one of those moments. Yes, it was post Firefly. And I just think Slither was a lot of fun. I remember I went and saw it in theaters, and you know, not a lot of people seem to. But it has its following now a little bit.
Yeah.
And I remember the story about this one was they were filming it by my old work.
Right.
Like 10 to 15 minutes from my old work. And I didn't find out until it was too late to try and crash the set.
Yeah.
So I was so mad.
Yeah.
So mad.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well. You going to be okay?
I'm going to cry.
Don't cry. Don't you cry tonight.
Oh, geez. Do you have to do a Guns N' Roses reference now? Is it necessary?
All right, are we done with slugs?
I think so. I don't have any more slug movies.
All right, so why don't we go on to centipedes?
I didn't write down any centipede ones, and human centipede doesn't count.
It doesn't count, but centipede horror does.
Oh, God, I've not seen this.
Have you heard
about
it?
About it. I'm kind of scared.
That's what I watched last night.
Why'd you watch that movie? Tell me all about it.
So this is a Hong Kong movie, fairly infamous, from 1982, directed by Keith Lee. I don't know, man. I mean, this one's just
you don't
kinda...
even know what to say about it. You're just sitting over there laughing about it. It must be horrible.
Okay, it has a really bad reputation. Like, this is one of those ones that, you know, people, especially when I started getting into, you know, more intense movies, like gory movies and stuff, and you know, this is one of those ones that, you know, is always kind of like, I don't know if I should watch Centipede Horror because apparently it's got these really intense scenes in it. It opens up with this this girl that wants to go on a field trip to South Asia with her friend. So she asks her brother if she can go, and he says, yeah, yeah, just don't tell your mom and you can go. So off she goes to this... to South Asia, and that's what she literally says, I want to go to South Asia, so that's where she goes. And her
dialogue sounds almost like Lady Terminator.
Yeah,
I'm not a lady, I'm an anthropologist. I want to go to South Asia.
So off they go to South Asia, and the I guess one of the first things that happens is they go for a run, and then they go to a street vendor and decide to get some something to drink. I can't remember what it was called, like grass juice or something.
Centipede ale.
So they drink the grass juice and or whatever it is. And, you know, I mean, it's just one of those sort of life lessons you should know. Just don't buy stuff, especially grass juice, from a sketchy looking street vendor. Because he's like this vendor, like with his little cart out literally in kind of in the middle of nowhere. And he looks really sketch. So anyway, they buy it off him, unbeknownst to them that he's actually an evil, I think he's kind of like an evil, like, witch or something that curses them. And anyway, off they go, and then they're on a tour group, and then one of them needs to go to the bathroom. So she goes to the bathroom, and her friend decides just to hang out. And
In the bathroom?
No, just to sort of hang out and wait for her. And then, like, the other girl's gone for, like, 2 minutes, and then you hear this scream. So the friend goes running over, and you see the one girl. This is the sister that wanted to go to South Asia. You see her lying on the ground, kind of covered in centipedes. And then the other girl dies of a heart attack because she's so scared. So, cut to hospital bed.
This doesn't seem like it makes much sense.
It doesn't. Cut to hospital bed, where the girl who was covered in centipedes is now afflicted by this mysterious illness. And anyway, she dies. And, but after she dies, they find like sort of bugs and centipedes all around her. It's really weird. Anyway, the, brother then decides he wants to, trying to figure out what happened to his sister. So then it just goes off into this, there's no centipedes for about the next hour, and it's actually kind of boring, but you know, it does feature, like, there, it gets really into like black magic and witchcraft and spells, and there's a bit of like religion stuff in it. And, you know, one of the highlights was there was an exorcism where this woman had a, her parents take her to this exorcist, and the exorcist has these two invisible ghosts that are helping him. So you're seeing like these invisible ghosts like moving shit around the room. And then the exorcist guy is like, okay, you need to come in this other room with me. So he takes the girl into the other room, leaves the parents in this like antechamber, and then closes the door. Then like drumming or, you know, hitting stuff on the table starts happening. And then he's like, ghosts, remove her clothes. So off her clothes go. She's naked and with her sort of gray-green belly. And then it goes really bananas because he's like banging on this thing and she starts screaming. And then she like, I don't know, like she's naked and she's like flopping around. And then she like pukes up scorpions, and it's just totally whack, right? And you're just like, and it doesn't really have anything to do with anything. And anyway, we finally get to like the end of the movie, and it was, this was kind of a chore, but the end, like the big scene that everyone sort of freaks out about is there's this woman who's also afflicted by the I guess the same curse. Eventually she needs to get rid of the curse, and she does so by vomiting up live centipedes. So like this actress actually has like multiple long live centipedes in her mouth that gross. She like spits out with puke. And yeah, it's quite the scene. Now, I don't think I would consider this, like, I watched the whole thing. I was a little nervous going in. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to deal with this. You know, because like on IMDb, they're like, don't eat while watching this movie and stuff like that.
What is with you lately watching all these movies? You know, Island of Death.
Well, I'm just like, if we're going to do insect horror, why not go big?
Go big.
But this was not nearly
go as... Bird Eye Gordon?
Pretty much. But I thought this was going to be really over the top, and I thought there was going to be tons of centipedes. And I got to say, in the last 20 minutes, yeah, there was definitely a frenzy of centipedes that culminated in this vomit scene. And then they're pretty creepy little creatures, and there was like a lot of them running around everywhere. But yeah, I wouldn't say this is nearly... I wouldn't be afraid of watching this movie if you're listening to this. And it's pretty infamous from a Hong Kong horror perspective. But yeah, I thought this could be the one that like kind of topped everything we're going to talk about tonight. But unfortunately, it fell pretty flat. Huh. But I've seen it finally now.
I still haven't seen it because, you know, I don't know if I really... Centipedes kind of creep me out.
They are really creepy.
But at the same time, they don't creep me out as much as other ones. Like, I just think they're like, centipedes always seem like they're just like on their merry little way. Like, doopy doopy doo.
Well, when they're being vomited out of someone, they're not super.
I guess they're not super like, you know, cute when they're getting vomited.
And there's a lot of really up close shots of the centipedes. And they're again like, kind of like that other movie, like kind of like Squirm. Like they make this really awful sound.
Oh, okay.
Like at least from the director. This director didn't really do much else either. It's kind of just random. This is just like a random movie, and it's just not really.
Well, probably people saw this movie and was like, I'm not giving you another job.
Maybe. I mean, I was expecting this to be way worse than it was. It certainly didn't live up to the reputation it has. So that's my next selection, Centipede Horror from 1982.
Well, speaking of going big, as in Bird Eye Gordon, let's talk about The Empire of the Ants.
All right.
This is one of the movies that in the mid to late 70s, he decided to adapt all these H.G. Wells stories. And one of them was Food of the Gods.
Yeah.
And that has some killer insects in it, but it's more of a full-on nature runs amok because it's also got giant killer rats and things like that in it. He also made Empire of the Ants.
Right.
Which is also based on H.G. Wells and stars, of all people, Joan Collins.
Yeah.
So it's Joan Collins, giant ants. I don't remember a heck of a lot about this movie. I just remember the effects look really crude in it, and that there's a scene in it where they lure the ants to a sugar factory. And you see the ant on like this big pile of sugar just going to town. But I also remember that Joan Collins had wore like a shirt that was tied in a knot at the front.
Yeah, I remember that too.
This is all I really remember about the movie. I did pick up the Blu-ray double feature with Jaws of Death.
Right.
So I was planning on revisiting it before we started, but alas, did not happen. But I find that even though Bert's movies are kind of like not great, like I don't really think Food of the Gods is that great. I don't really think that, you know, Amazing Colossal Man is that great. But I find his movies to be watchable if you're in the right frame of mind.
Yeah, have to be in the right frame of mind.
And I remember seeing Empire of the Ants when I was a kid and having fun with it. This is another one of those Sunday afternoon kind of things we were talking about. Like, a lot of the movies that I've wrote down are ones that I remember seeing on TV on like a weekend.
Like a rainy Sunday.
Yeah, like in the afternoon. These are all movies that I remember because... Another one I'm going to bring up soonish is the same kind of deal where I remember just seeing it as a kid and just having fun with it. And now I'm thinking to myself, you know, if I saw that today, I would probably dislike it, but I would still watch the hell out of it.
Yeah, like some of these ones, like I think this one would be one. If I sat down, like, I'm going to have a movie night tonight and I watched Empire of the Ants, I don't know if I'd be that into it. But yeah. If I watched it on a rainy Sunday, it would probably be a better experience.
Well, yeah, like if you're at home one day and you're being lazy, you know, you haven't been out, you've woken up, you're just chilling around the house, be like, ah, Empire of the Ants, what the hell? I feel like it's the kind of movie where you wouldn't be making the effort to actually walk to your shelf, pull it off, put it in the player, and press play. But if you were flipping through the TV channels, you're like, oh shit, Empire of the Ants is on, you'd watch it.
Right.
Got it. It's one of those kind of things.
Yeah.
Which a lot of these that we're talking about are probably like that for me.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the whole giant bug subgenre is like that.
They should all be like relegated to Sunday
afternoons. Definitely Bird Eye Gordon movies.
That's the only time they should show these things is on Sunday afternoons.
I wish they'd bring back, like, remember we were talking a couple of weeks ago, maybe the last episode, about, remember when they used to play movies on TV? Like,
that's when I saw most of my...
They just don't do that. There's so many freaking channels now, but like back in the day, it used to be like there was a movie on Sundays. And you just watched whatever they put on.
Yeah, like Sunday afternoons was when I remembered seeing, like, you know, like I said before, like early Bruce Lee movies.
Yeah.
It's when I used to see Godzilla movies, like the Toho old school Godzilla movies and things like that. Yeah. Sunday afternoons were awesome when you were a kid.
They were.
In our generation.
Oh, yeah,
because, you know, those are also things that helped contribute to me being a big movie fan, too. Because, you know, you were escaping into these worlds that we were talking about.
Yeah, and I really miss that, and I really like, you know, my girlfriend's got a son, and I'd love for him to, like, sit down and watch these movies with me, but there's no way. Like, I don't think kids today are even remotely interested, which is too bad.
Well, it's definitely too bad.
Yeah.
If it's not CG, I'm not interested.
Exactly.
That seems to be the new motto.
Totally.
Do you want to hear something, speaking of youth, just to get us off track for a second here?
Oh, just what we need.
Yeah. Just to get off track, we were doing, at my work, we were doing this movie trivia where we were trying to, like, you know, they were doing it for fun. They were giving people prizes for getting it right. And, you know, at the end of the night, there was only a few prizes left. The person who was doing the questions came up to me and said, hey, what's the easiest movie question you can think of that everybody will know? I said, okay, tell them to name one of the seven dwarfs. Does it get much easier than that?
No.
About 50%, if not more, of the people we asked did not know.
Really?
And the person I was with said, that's it. I'm going home right now and I'm planning for the apocalypse because this is a sign of it right
here.
Isn't that terrible?
Well, and that's the thing. I'll bet you the kids I know could not do it.
But doesn't that say something for the way culture is now? Like, in the sense that because everything is so accessible, you would think people would know this stuff.
No. But
at the same time, they're like, I don't understand it. How could you not know the seven dwarfs?
Because it's old news, dude. Like, people don't care about that stuff anymore.
God damn, I feel old all the time.
You should have asked them what color the brick road was in The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, they'd probably be like, purple?
I know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm probably the ants. Sunday, a lost Sunday afternoon matinee kind of movie.
I'm going to start doing that every Sunday.
You're going to start watching?
I'm going to start watching a old sci-fi movie on Sunday afternoons.
Yeah, you should watch some of the ones we're talking about.
Yeah.
You should watch like Empire of the Ants. Do a double feature. Do Food of the Gods and Empire of the Ants together at last.
Perfect.
There you go.
There you go. I think that actually was a double feature.
More than likely.
Anchor
they came
Bay put out.
Oh, really? No, the MGM DVD I have of Empire of the Ants comes with tentacles.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and Food of the Gods was paired up with something, but it also was released by itself.
Yeah, that's the one I have. Because before, back in those days, I'm like, I don't want any double features.
Now I thrive on double features.
Yeah, me too.
Why wouldn't you? If a double feature is the only way a movie's going to get released on Blu-ray or DVD, I'm all for that.
Totally.
Because if they're not going to make their money, let's be honest. Jaws of Satan. Are they going to make money off Jaws of Satan if they release that by itself?
No.
Pair that up with Empire of the Ants?
Yes.
Yes. I bought it.
Yeah.
Would I buy Jaws of Satan by itself? Fuck no. You know, that's the thing. I'm all for double features.
Yeah. Right on. All right. So I'm going to switch gears here. Well, not really. I'm not switching gears at all. I'm staying in Bugs. But I'm going to bring up one from the 2000s.
Holy. I don't think I even got any from the 2000s.
Well, it's from 2000.
Oh, okay.
So this is a movie called They Nest.
Oh, yeah. I've seen this. I don't remember.
I can't remember what the AKA is. It's got another title.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Creepy Crawlies, I think.
Is it Creepy Crawlies?
Yeah, I think it's called Creepy Crawlies.
Okay.
Or Creepy Crawlers. Anyway, it's directed by Ellery Elkayam.
Yeah.
This is a movie primarily about cockroaches, but it's got a whole bunch of bugs in it. It stars Thomas Calabro from Melrose Place, along with Dean Stockwell and John Savage. And it's pretty much about this doctor who goes into the small town, and the town eventually gets overrun by bugs.
Seems to be a theme.
And I remember this being a pretty fun movie. Have you seen this one?
I saw it a long time ago, and I do have it because it's included on one of those Lionsgate 8 movie horror discs.
Right.
Remember they released those like a few years ago that everybody was going crazy to try and find copies of them?
Oh, yeah. That's on one of them?
Yeah, it's on the one with like Bloody Murder 1 and Bloody Murder 2. And
oh, okay.
Some other movies. But the thing about the director is that... That guy is the guy who I hold fully responsible for destroying the Return of the Living Dead series.
Yeah, I know.
Because he made Part 4 and Part 5, which are both horrible.
Yeah, the two worst.
But he also did make another insect movie.
Yes, he did.
Which we will talk about probably very soon.
We're going to talk. I'll just wrap up about...
Well, after we talk about Creepy Crawlies, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about Creepy Crawlies. The only reason I'm bringing it up is because when we talked about this topic, it was actually the first thing that came into my mind.
I think it's just the title.
Well, yeah, and I did really like this movie. It's one of those ones that I think I rented it back in the video store days.
Yeah, I remember renting it.
I remember thinking this isn't going to be very good and being really surprised and really liking it because there was a lot of real bugs in it and there was quite a variety of bugs. So it's just, if you're looking for like a kind of a more modern bug movie, because there's a shit ton now with Sci-Fi Channel and all that are all
there's
CG bugs.
Too many now.
But this one, it did have some CG in it, but I do remember there being a lot of real bugs. It was also shot here in Vancouver, so there's a couple of Vancouver landmarks I also noticed. But I thought this was a pretty fun movie that I thought maybe a lot of people wouldn't know about, but this is a better of the a better modern, more modern type of bug movie before CG completely took over.
You know what else is a movie? Like, because you were talking about where you rent a movie and you're like, I don't know if this is going to be any good, and then it turns out to be a lot better than you expected. One of the ones that I wrote down that's like that is a movie from 1988 called The Nest.
Right.
Which came out from Scream Factory recently on Blu-ray. Yeah, yeah. And it's a Roger Corman Concord Pictures production directed by Terrence H. Winkless, who did Blood Fist and Rage and Honor. And it also stars Lisa Langos as the main character. And it's just...
It's Patsy from 1984. Yeah. Also 1984.
Yeah, and it's typical. It's just your usual, you know, here we go again. Small town, attacked by giant cockroaches. Sheriff has to stop them. The storyline's pretty much the same in all these movies. The thing I remember about They Nest is that, first of all, the video box artwork was amazing.
The Nest or They Nest?
The Nest.
All right.
It was amazing because it was a hand-drawn photo of a girl basically being molested by a giant cockroach.
Yeah, I remember
and
that one.
That, when I saw that in the video store, I was like, that looks awesome. Movie's probably going to stink. I remember taking it home, there being like a lot of like really cool practical effects of people being attacked by the cockroaches.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was a really fun movie. It's like 85 minutes, whatever. It's like very quick, very fast paced. And I actually wanted to bring that up because you were talking about movies that surprised you. That's one of the ones. And I'm really looking forward to revisiting that on Blu-ray soon.
Nice. So apparently movies with Nest in the title are worth checking out.
Why not?
Yeah.
And then let's go back to Mr. Ellery.
Yes.
And talk about his other bug movie, which is Eight-Legged Freaks from 2002.
Yeah, I haven't seen this, so I don't really know what
it's in theaters, if you could believe it.
Wow. Yeah, I don't really know what, I don't have much to say.
I don't really
about
know
it.
Why I went to see it, because it stars David Arquette, so.
But it seems like it would be fun.
It has its moments.
Like, it seems, it's just from what I know of it, it looks like it would be,
yeah, like
a real
fun. There's a pretty
fun
scene where the spiders are, like, attacking these guys on dirt bikes. Where they're, like, leaping on them and stuff like that. And, you know, I can't remember what the guy's name is. Who's the guy who co-starred in Be Kind Rewind with Jack Black? Mos Def.
Mos Def.
He's in it as, like, a DJ who, like, does a radio show out of his RV. And he's kind of, like, a conspiracy theorist. And he's really fun in it. Like, I thought he was pretty funny. And, you know, it's a lot of heavy CG in that movie.
Yeah, I think that's what turned me off of it.
But there is, like, at the end, they end up having to fight the spiders in the mall using, like, various crib-together tools and everything. I remember that being kind of fun. Like, it's not a terrible movie by any means, but it's not a movie that I've ever thought about watching again since I saw it in theaters.
Right. Do you own it?
I don't.
Yeah.
So that's got to say something.
Yeah, and it's, you know, same thing. Like, I thought it kind of looked charming, but it's just, I think, you know, if it was on Netflix, I'd probably check it out.
Yeah, like, I don't remember hating it.
But yeah, I don't think I'd ever
it's
go
definitely
out and buy it.
Better than his freaking Return of the Living Dead movies, asshole. Sorry.
Yeah, like, what happened there? Like, how do you make two, like, semi-decent kind of, you know, kind of fun creature type movies and then go to, like, terrible, terrible killing a genre or killing a franchise movies.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I would like to hope that maybe they got re-edited without his approval, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, those are disasters.
So, holy, I still got quite a few here. Do you?
I've only got a handful left.
Okay, well, I guess we'll bring up one of the obvious... maybe I won't. Yeah, I think I will. Why don't we talk about Arachnophobia?
Yes, I had actually forgotten about this movie till earlier today. I was like,
really?
Ah, shit, I better write that one down because I forgot about it. And I actually had a lot of fun with Arachnophobia. I had fun with it when it first came out on VHS.
Yeah.
And I actually had fun when I saw it like maybe 5 years ago still.
Yeah.
So it's held up pretty good from what I can recall.
Yeah. And I didn't see it when it first came out. And I remember checking it out probably about 10 years later. So around 2000, I probably saw this for the first time and only time. So it's directed by Frank Marshall. This came out in 1990. Frank Marshall also brought us Alive and Congo.
Unfortunately, he brought us Congo.
And it stars Jeff Daniels.
Yep.
And, it's like...
Small town attacked by spiders. This is one that went for a lot of comedy too, though.
It did. And, I remember having a good time with this.
Yeah, like John Goodman plays an exterminator. Yeah. He kind of goes over the top and it's kind of
steals
fun.
The show, yeah.
But I also remember about this movie is that at the time, one of my friends who was deathly afraid of spiders watched this movie and it freaked them the hell out.
Oh, really?
And I just spent my time laughing at her the entire time because she's like, oh, this is the most terrible movie. And there was like this cool, I remember there's this cool scene where Jeff Daniels has to go down into the basement and he's like, they're like digging around in the basement and you can just see the spiders like off in his peripheral vision.
Right, yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is kind of icky. I don't like where this is going. I remember having a lot of fun with it.
It had some effective scenes with the spiders, but I don't remember being blown away by this. And I don't remember it too much, but I do have fond memories of the movie. I don't remember it sucking or anything.
Yeah, I remember it actually did pretty good when it came out, too.
It did, yeah.
So,
effects by Chris Wallace.
Yeah, that's another one. We're having a trend here where I want to revisit a lot of these, and I wish I had more time to do it before we started.
Oh, I always wish that whenever we do one of these topic episodes, I'm always like, I always wish I had more time before that. I always come out of the episode wanting to see a ton of movies. So I'm hoping the listeners are having the same reaction that I am, because right now I've got a huge list here of movies.
Yeah. I don't think that Centipede movie's on my list.
Centipede Horror?
Yeah, I don't think I wrote down Centipede Horror as one I want
to
visit.
It's okay. But it doesn't need to be. Well, the only thing I'll say about it is if you're afraid of it because you think it'll be too extreme, you can go ahead.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
So another one that I have fond memories of that I don't really remember, that every once in a while when we're looking through stacks of movies to watch when we're together, because we usually try and watch a movie after we're done recording,
yeah,
I always show you this box and then we never get around to watching it, is a movie called Blue Monkey from 1987.
I wrote that one down too, yeah.
And I don't remember a heck of a lot about this movie, to be honest with you. I just remember that, first of all, the title of the movie makes no fucking sense whatsoever because there's no monkeys in sight. No. It's set in a hospital and it's a giant insect attacking people in the hospital.
I always thought this was about a porn star monkey, but...
Oh, I get it.
No, I literally did. I thought it was about the porn industry for the longest time. Yeah.
Like, you're not just trying to make a joke on the title.
No, I really...
Why would you think it was about a porn star?
I think because I always got it confused. There was, like, another movie called, like, The Blue Movie Murders or something. So whenever I saw this, I guess when I was young, I was like, oh, blue. Blue means well, yeah, naughty. You know?
I remember that back in back when I was a kid.
And it was like this creature like chasing nurses on the cover, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, ooh, naughty monkey. You know?
I remember back when I was a kid, though, there was like, we had this channel called City TV. And every Friday night, they'd play The Blue Movie, which was always like, you know, softcore movies.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's where that came from for me, like blue, yeah, you know, blue movies and stuff like that. So I can see where you're going for, but that box is what made me rent that movie in the first place, even though...
Yeah, because you were thinking a monkey was going to be after the nurses. Well, the
title didn't make sense. The original title of the movie was Green Monkey, which makes even less sense. And you're just like, why have monkey in the title? I'd like to know the story behind the title of this movie.
Right.
I mean, I think it was also at one time just called Insect. Well, which would have made a bit more sense. But it was it's another one that's kind of doesn't take itself seriously. It's got like Paul Flaherty from SCTV has a role in
Joe Flaherty?
Or Joe Flaherty, yeah, yeah. Sorry. It's directed by William Fruitt, who's a generally decently known Canadian director. Yeah. He actually had a run of pretty good movies in the 70s and 80s. He made Spasms, which is this really bizarre, like, psychiatry patients getting killed by like a snake. Guy transforms into a snake. It's really weird. He made a movie called House by the Lake, which is also known as Death Weekend, which is kind of a deliverancey kind of Last House on the Left vibe to it. And then he also made Killer Party in the year before. He made Blue Monkey, which is just like your typical slasher movie at a prom party, like a graduation party.
Right.
Which actually wasn't too bad either. So yeah, he had a pretty good run of movies, but Blue Monkey, I just wanted to bring up because go online and look up that video box cover and you'll understand why I rented it in the first place.
Yeah, it's a great cover.
Because it's like Josh said, it's nurses in the foreground running away from a giant bug. So,
Steve Railsback's in it.
And the thing is, the nurses, they're your typical 80s movie nurses where they're hot blondes with like their cleavage showing. You're like, I wish I had nurses like that when I was in the hospital.
I know, it was like a giant bug attacked one of those Roger Corman nurse movies.
Yeah, pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, we might as well talk about Kingdom of the Spiders.
Might as well.
Yeah.
I love Kingdom of the Spiders.
Yeah, so this is from 1977, directed by John Bud Cardos. So this is another...
With Bud being his nickname, because it's always in quotations.
Yeah, and this is just like that other guy I mentioned. Who the hell did I mention earlier? But John Bud Cardos was also a actor, and he was also in Satan Sadist. So that's
Graydon Clark.
Graydon Clark, yeah. So that's more where I... Because he played the Native American biker in Satan Sadist. And if you've seen Satan Sadist, you'll know he plays quite a prominent
role. Is Satan
role.
Sadist the Al Adamson one?
It's so good, man.
Did Al Adamson make
Al
it?
Al Adamson, oh, okay, yeah. Okay. Russ Tamblyn's the lead guy. It's okay. So good.
Russ Tamblyn was in a lot of biker movies.
He was. It's so
including
good.
The Pink Angels. Look that one up, people.
I can't wait to do a biker episode one day, man.
Oh,
I love
we will.
Biker movies.
We will.
Anyway, that's where not John Bud Cardos from, but he directed Kingdom of the Spiders and some other movies as well.
Yeah, like The Dark and Mutant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but I love Kingdom of the Spiders.
It's pretty good. So, starring William Shatner, so you can't really go wrong, and Tiffany Balling,
look out, there's spiders over there.
So, B-movie fans will know Tiffany from Candy Snatchers, among other things. It's also has Hoke Howell in it.
Wasn't she also in, was she in Hollywood Boulevard?
No.
No, okay, I'm getting her confused with Candace.
Candy Railson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never mind, people.
Yeah, she was in... She's, yeah.
Nothing to see here. Move on.
Hoke Howell was also in this. He was in a bunch of, like, Fredal and Ray's movies when he was older. And Woody Strode, you know, the black guy from Spartacus.
Yeah. Way to racial profiler.
No, not racial profiler. Just like poor Woody Strode. He's been in so many movies, but he's always going to be known as the black guy from Spartacus. Anyway.
I don't know. I'm not even going to touch it.
So
the thing about Kingdom
of... What do you think happens in Kingdom of the Spiders, Chris?
A small town is attacked by spiders.
Very good.
And one hero has to stop them. But you see, the thing is, the reason I like Kingdom of the Spiders is because they're not mutated.
No.
They're not giant size. They're just regular tarantula spiders who just want to overtake the world. Like, these are persistent little buggers.
Yeah.
They, you know, it also... The reason I like it is because the second half of it becomes kind of like Night of the Living Dead with tarantulas, because William Shatner, Tiffany Balling, and everyone else are holed up in a hotel while the spiders are trying to work their way in. So they're like coming down the chimneys and going into the air vents and everything. And then there's that just like this really cool stuff. Like there's this really cool final shot that I don't want to spoil for anybody.
Where it's pretty epic though.
Where he looks out of the hotel.
Yeah.
And you know,
no, it's not great.
Not so good. It's
one of the better final shots in a horror movie.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And William Shatner, I thought, was really good in this. Like, I don't really like him that much, to be honest, because I'm not a Star Trek person. But he's really good in this. Like, he's just really a solid hero type in this movie.
Yeah.
He's just, like, no guff, not willing to stomp on as many tarantulas as it's going to take to survive the night.
Yeah.
And that, I had just re-picked up this movie because I love it. I wanted to see it. And it was always available in like the shitty kind of full frame DVD.
Yeah, I have like a shitty VHS.
Until like Shout Factory put it out a few, like 4 or 5 years ago in the special edition.
Did Shout put it out?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually a really cool little special edition. So it's a great movie. This is one I used to watch all the time when I was a kid.
Does it have features on it?
It does.
Like a commentary?
Commentary, interview
really?
With William Shatner.
Wow.
All kinds of stuff.
That's pretty awesome.
It's like a 35th anniversary edition or something like that. Pretty good disc, man.
I'll put it on my shopping cart.
On my
wish list.
You'll put it on your Josh shouldn't be buying more movies but is going to anyway list?
Anyway,
Kingdom of Spiders is a movie I used to watch all the time.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, and it's just stuck with me because... Like I said, it's not giant insects. It's just regular sized spiders. And apart from really arachnophobia and things like that, it seems like spiders were the ones that were always mutated the most, that were always giants.
Yeah.
Like with Giant Spider Invasion, where they were like a terrible fucking movie. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's a scene where it's a giant spider coming towards them, and it's a fucking Volkswagen Beetle that they've just like taped spider arms onto and driven towards the people. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah, no, this one's kind of notable for having real spiders in it. I mean, I think the budget was like $200,000 and $50,000 of that was spent on spiders.
Well, there's a lot of frickin' spiders in this movie.
They told the spider wranglers, go out and buy as many spiders as you can for $10 each. And they came back with 5,000 tarantulas.
Wow.
And
I would not want to be in a room with that many tarantulas.
Yeah, and like Shatner, holy balls, dude. Like, this guy's got spiders on him, and yeah, like, I just wouldn't want to, like, because there's scenes in this movie where you're seeing them like driving up and they're running over the tarantulas and they're like in a room and there's tarantulas. These are real tarantulas, like they're stomping on the tarantulas. And yeah, animal rights activists, don't watch this movie.
Man, Shatner was a trooper in this movie though.
Yeah, oh my god,
he's so good in it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And and the fact that it's all real, like these are all real spiders, is, you know, I mean, of course nowadays it would all be CG. Like, you couldn't make a movie like this now.
yeah, you couldn't.
But not only, you know, not even without all this, like, you know, kitsch factor of it being real spiders, it, like Chris says, I think Night of the Living Dead, the spiders, is a pretty apt description of
pretty much spiders of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
But another one, like, I watched a lot when I was a kid that I wrote down. And this is a 70s TV movie, because there was a run of 70s TV movies that were insect movies. You know, there was like Tarantulas, The Deadly Cargo, and Ants and things like that. Like, these are movies I'm not really going to talk about. But one that I remember was a movie called The Savage Bees.
Right.
And the thing is that I always get this movie confused with its sequel, which is called Terror Out of the Sky.
Right.
So Savage Bees was... one of those movie of the week kind of things, you know, where a town...
I miss movie of the weeks.
I feel
so nostalgic for old TV right now, man.
I know. It's like I was looking and I was like, oh, man, I wish they would show stuff like Killdozer on TV again.
I know. Like, not only do they play theatrical movies at, like, on, like, special times on Sundays, but you'd also get these, like, movie events every week.
Yeah, like...
that everyone watched.
Like Kolchak, The Night Stalker.
Yeah, man.
You know, or, like, Trilogy of Terror and all this stuff that.
Yeah,
but,
The Car.
This one starred Ben Johnson and Michael Parks. And, you know, I don't really remember...
It's called The Savage Bees?
The Savage Bees.
Okay.
I really remember a lot about Savage Bees. I more remember that in Terror of the Sky, which was the sequel, and starred Dan Haggerty, who was Grizzly Adams, in case everyone's wondering. There was a scene in it where this band, this school band, was stuck in a school bus getting surrounded by the bees.
Ooh.
And the heroes had to save them. And I was so, it was so intense to me when I was like 8 and I was watching. I was like, oh my God, are they totally going to live? What's going to happen? Are the bees going to get them? Looking back on it now, it feels silly, but man, that movie, I still remember that scene to this day. And I have not seen that movie since I was a kid.
Wow.
So that's why I wrote it down.
Nice. Now, I don't think I've seen any of the bee movies.
Really?
Well, I've seen a lot of bee movies.
What about, like, The Swarm?
No, I haven't seen The Swarm.
You figure you'd be all over The Swarm because of Irvin Allen.
Yeah, and, you know, and I guess the thing to me is, and maybe it's because I haven't seen any of these movies, but bees and wasps just don't seem very scary to me. Like, you know, like, spiders seem scary to me, but bees and wasps, like, flying insects don't really creep me out the
same.
Dude,
you get stung by 6 wasps at once and you'll find them a little bit
scared. I did. I have two
and it sucks.
My old place, I had a barbecue outside and one day I noticed there were all these wasps flying against my patio door, so I went out to investigate and I opened the barbecue and they had made a nest out of the entire inside of my barbecue. Yeah, and I got stung like 7 times.
Wow.
And then they were angrily trying to get at me through the door. But yeah,
they're like bumping in the door. They're like, we'll get you. You didn't like Nightmare on Elm Street 3. We'll get you.
I know. Between that and all the like psychotic horror fans that are going to be stalking me now trying to...
The Swarm was a 70s Irwin Allen production. He also directed it. And the thing...
Irwin Allen was the king of the disaster movies.
He was. Like, he did The Towering Inferno and
Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah. This was kind of like his disaster horror movie.
Yeah.
Because it was basically like... It was kind of like... I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember, like, the main poster image is of a high-rise building surrounded by bees.
Yeah.
So I'm like... Get all these actors like Henry Fonda and, like, you know, Michael Caine and Richard Chamberlain and
Catherine Ross, Richard Widmark, you know, Olivia de Havilland, etc.
Slim Pickens.
Yeah.
And you throw them in this
high
rise.
That's what Irwin Allen was known for, was some sort of crazy situation filled with like a who's who of who was popular.
His disaster movies were like the Cannonball Run of disaster movies.
Yeah, each one of them was like a cannonball run. Yeah.
So he would, like, you know, have all these big stars in it in small roles. But in this one, he decided, you know what? I've done the high rise. I've done the boat. Why don't I do a fucking high rise with some bees? And this movie sucked.
Yeah, I've heard not too good things about this.
I did not like this one.
And they're always long. Irwin Allen movies are always really long.
If you're going to make a killer bees movie, don't make it like The Swarm where it's 1 hour, 58 minutes long.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
There's only so much, like, out of all the insects we've mentioned here, honestly, bees to me, like you said, are probably the least threatening to
me. That's what I think,
because,
yeah.
Because, like, really, what are they? They're like little specks. Like when you're watching these movies, they're little specks attacking people.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know. There's just something about that that I don't find scary.
Yeah.
I'm just like, well, big deal.
It's and just, you just close the door and they don't come in.
It's just a bee. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm sure I'm wrong, but the Swarm sucked. I can't really think of any B movies, to be honest with you, that I thought were really good.
Yeah, like, I mean, I've got a few written down here. There's, like, The Bees from 1978. That's, like, that Mexican...
With John Saxon. Yeah, that's the only reason to watch it. Mexican director. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah, Angel Tompkins and John Carradine are in it, but haven't seen it also because I'm not really into The Bees. There was also Killer Bees from 1974, another TV movie directed by Curtis Harrington.
Yep.
And, with Edward Albert, Gloria Swanson. I think this was one of her last roles. I think that Airport movie might have been her last role. But again, like, just, yeah, there was all these B movies, but I just never saw any of them.
Like, the last one I remember seeing was a Killer Wasp movie called Black Swarm from, like, 2007.
Yeah.
That had Robert Englund as, like, a mad scientist in it. And even that, I'm just like, I'm watching it, and I'm just like, you know, I really don't find these things scary. They're like the size of my thumb.
And there's been a bunch of them in this new CG craze as of late. There has been a bunch more bee movies, but yeah, just they just
I think
don't...
bees are my least favorite killer insects.
So have you seen The Swarm though, right?
Yeah, I've seen The Swarm.
But you just thought it was kind of
Not very good.
Yeah,
I was bored.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing is, like, I remember seeing it as a kid, and when you're a kid, you don't give a shit that he's gathered together all these big name actors to be in it, because you don't even really know who these big name actors are, right?
Yeah.
The only thing that makes The Swarm kind of fun to watch now is to see these
big name actors
in the movie. That's the only attraction of this movie. It's not a good movie. It was just boring to me. Like, I've saw it maybe 5-6 years, maybe a little bit longer. Was the last time I saw it, and I just remember being bored.
Yeah, I've got that Bees movie in my closet too, that Mexican one, and
I know we've looked at it
a
couple times, but then we just like shrug at each other and watch something with boobs in it. That's usually what happens. You know, like Muggsy's Girls. What a fucking great decision that was.
Did we talk about what we watched after last time?
Yeah.
What was it?
What are you talking about?
Oh no, because we watched Bad Grandpa.
Yeah, we watched Bad Grandpa.
Yeah.
Why are you throwing this off track? You confused
me. Well,
because
I'm like, we didn't talk about what we watched after the last episode, and then I'm like, oh, we watched Bad Grandpa.
Yeah, I'm not going to bring up Bad Grandpa.
Well, I just brought it up.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
One of the ones that I thought was worth mentioning, even though I don't really care for it, simply because of who made it, is Mimic from 1997.
I've never seen it.
Directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
Thing about Guillermo del Toro, it's a giant cockroach movie, and I thought the effects were decent. I just wasn't really down with it, because the thing about him is that I find he's more effective when he's making movies in his native language. Like when he's in Mexico making movies in Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, like Kronos.
Yeah.
And Pan's Labyrinth and Devil's Backbone. Like all those movies, amazing.
Yeah.
Like top-notch movies. I just don't like his American movies. Like Hellboy, people seem to love Hellboy. I didn't really care for Hellboy.
I liked Hellboy.
You know, Mimic, I should have liked it by all rights. It's about giant cockroaches in the New York sewers. I should have liked it. I couldn't get into it, you know?
Yeah.
Blade 2, everyone says it's the best Blade movie. I'm just like, meh, shrug about it. Pacific Rim, no desire to see Pacific Rim.
Yeah, I actually, that's one of the only movies I've walked out of.
You know,
I totally hear what you mean. Guillermo's done some great movies in Mexico, but haven't seen a lot of his non-Mexican output.
Yeah, like his American movies just don't do it for me, and I don't understand it because I think he's a good director.
And he's a fan.
I know.
He's one of those guys that's like totally into the genre. Like he's not just a hired gun. Like this guy's really into it. But
like I'm really, really holding out hope that Crimson Peak is going to be the American movie he makes that does it for me.
Yeah, but it's got Charlie Hunnam in it.
I know. Who fucking cares about that guy?
Well,
apparently women on my Facebook feed. But that's another story for another day.
Yeah.
So Mimic, it had two directed DVD sequels, which I actually heard are not too bad, but I just don't know, man. I
Well, I also heard this is another one, like, and I don't know. I don't know how much I buy into this whole thing, as we learned with Alien 3. But I've heard that this is another one that maybe there's another cut out there now.
Well, there's a director's cut on Blu-ray.
That's apparently quite a bit different than theatrical.
Okay.
So maybe that makes a difference. Well, I don't know.
It's a Miramax movie, and apparently the Weinsteins have a very bad reputation for recutting shit. So it's quite possible.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is one, like, I feel like I should have liked it, and I didn't. But I still, at the same time, have no real desire to watch it again.
Right.
And that kind of upsets me because I do like him.
Yeah.
Like, I do like Guillermo del Toro. Like, Pan's Labyrinth and Devil's Backbone, like we said, those are movies I could watch quite happily and love every time.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just the North American, like, it's, I don't know what it is. I wish I could figure it out.
I'm kind of fortunate in that I've never seen Mimic, so maybe I'll just start with the director's cut and see how that goes.
Well, there you go. Maybe that might be a good idea.
But again, like you said, though, I've just never been like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Mimic, awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So when I'm looking at my list here, I only have one more movie I want to mention.
And that's, of the ones we've taught, ones we've seen type thing.
Yeah.
We must be getting kind of long in the tooth with our time.
Yeah, we're here, like, over 2 hours.
That's awesome.
So,
hope you guys are digging the insect talk. I hope we're not boring you.
The only one I wanted to bring up for my last one was a movie called Bug from 1975.
That's the last one I was going to bring up, too.
Which is directed by Jeanette Schwartz, who would do Jaws 2 later on, which actually isn't terrible.
And Supergirl.
And Supergirl.
And Santa Claus movie.
Oh, no, not Santa Claus. I actually kind of like Jaws 2, but that's, you know, that's for our shark swimming killer movie.
Yeah.
But the thing about Bug is it's a William Castle production. William Castle was known for making, you know, 13 Ghosts, The Tingler. He was a gimmicky kind of...
I think Castle wrote it, too.
Yeah, I think so. But he was a gimmicky kind of director, but he kind of dropped the gimmick when he got recognition for producing Rosemary's Baby, and it went on to win some Oscars and everything. And Bug was really one of his last things he did, I believe. And it's the same thing. Small town, bugs, sheriff, scientists. But it's like these cockroaches that actually can start fires by, like, clicking their rear ends together.
Yeah.
And there's some memorable scenes in it. Like, there's a scene in it where the chick's like, gets her hair set on fire by one of them.
Yeah.
There's one where, like, the cover image is of a girl holding a phone receiver screaming with the bug melting the receiver and coming out of it.
It's a pretty awesome gimmick, actually.
But the creepiest thing I remember from that was when there's a scene later on in the movie when Bradford...
Dillman.
He's
from
the
Piranha.
From the Piranha. He's the scientist trying to figure the bugs out. And he's in a room where they all are, and they spell out "We live" on the wall.
Oh, okay.
Like, with their bodies.
Nice.
And I was like, that's the creepiest shit I've ever seen in a bug movie. And that's why I brought up Bug.
Yeah.
Because no matter what movies we talk about and praise through the roof, Bug might not be a great movie, but that scene alone creeps me the fuck out all the time.
Well, it's when looking into this episode and figuring out what we're going to talk about, when I did come across Bug, it's probably the number one movie I want to check out after we're done.
Really?
Of all these, yeah. That's the one I want to watch
that
first.
That We Live thing just creeps the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Like, even just seeing an image of that screenshot, I'm just like, wow. Like, whoever came up with that, like, that's just genius. Because
William,
like,
Castle, probably.
Why? But that's just showing you, like, you know, we're always saying how insects are really smart.
Yeah.
Like, even when they're not killing human beings.
Yeah.
So to see that, you're like, you can really see, like, because a lot of times you're like, oh, it's just a bug. Just stomp on it and it's gone, right? In this movie, they're showing that intelligence that's kind of like on par with the humans. And I think that's the main thing I like about Bug. It's kind of a cheesy drive-in movie because it's a William Castle movie.
Yeah.
But it's got those little flashes of brilliance in it,
right on.
And that scene, I'm just thinking about it right now, it's making my skin crawl.
Oh,
a little
yeah, I
bit.
Can see you getting all excited over there.
A little bit, a little bit. It gives me a little bit of the creeps, admittedly.
Yeah, right on. That's good. That's where it's all about. There's also they think they attack a cat, so that's never a bad thing. Okay, so you said you wanted to mention just any others that we kind of wanted. One other honorable mention here. Actually, no, I'll bring it up later. So just, is there any others that that you think we should mention that we kind of want to see that maybe haven't?
The only one I can think of that I want to see is Big Ass Spider.
Yeah, I
which
agree.
Which was directed by Mike Mendez.
Yeah.
Who made...
The Convent.
Yep, The Convent and...
Grave Dancers.
Grave Dancers, yeah. And he also did...
Lavantula.
Lavantula recently, which, you know, I'm really sick of these fucking amalgamation movies.
Well, because it's Mike Mendez, I might check it out. I'm really I kind of like this guy. Seems like a genre fan. Like, seems like one of us.
Yeah.
But, anyway, yeah, this one looks pretty fun.
It looks like fun. And, you know, I know it's going to be heavy CG, but I know it's got its tongue firmly planted in cheek.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to see that.
Yeah. No, I agree with Big Ass Spider for sure. That was originally released in 2013.
And I kind of want to go back and revisit some of these 50s ones. Like, I wouldn't really like to just hunt down some of these really obscure 50s ones that we didn't bring up today and just see. Like, I'm very curious about why killer insects were such a big thing in that decade. So I'd really like to hunt that down. I'm actually curious if there's ever been like a book written about that or anything. I'm going to have to look into that.
On killer insects?
No, just on like the 50s craze of like giant monster movies atomic thing. I'm sure there is. I'm going to have to see if anyone knows of one that they can recommend to me, let me know.
Yeah. A couple more that I wouldn't mind checking out. This one's kind of borderline on the bug thing, but I know there is bugs in it, but it just looks so whacked out. But I certainly have to be in the right mood for it. It's called Phase 4 from 1974.
Yeah, I didn't really like it that much.
Yeah, I think it looks like 2001. You'd have to really be in the right mindset.
Yeah, it's very dry and scientific.
And weird, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, I think part of the reason for that is it's directed by Saul Bass,
yep.
Who was a title designer, who's a famous title designer at the time. He wasn't really known as being a director.
Yeah, for like Psycho and things like that.
Yeah, a lot of Hitchcock movies. So that's one I'd like to check out, but I don't know. I have to be in the right mood.
Definitely.
Another one I'd like to revisit that I really didn't like at the time, but I think I might like it now, is Mosquito. From 1995.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like it either.
It's coming out on
Blu-ray from Synapse. So.
I know it is coming out again. It was directed by Gary Jones. It starred Gunnar Hansen from Texas Chainsaw. And yeah, I didn't like it. Like, I kind of hated it at the time, actually.
Dude, but he fights mosquitoes with a chainsaw.
Yeah, I know. And and he's like, where's my chainsaw? So he plays on the whole Leatherface thing. So I wouldn't mind revisiting Mosquito. Yeah, and I think that's it. That's all I've got for the whole. I just wanted to bring up Monster from Green Hell as well. That's another 50s one we forgot to talk about. And just really briefly, just wanted to mention this short film that Chris and I watched.
Oh, geez.
Before this episode that I had stumbled across called Silk.
Yeah, I walk in the door and he's like, hey man, gotta watch this short film. I'm like, why? He's like, come on, gotta watch it. It's got to do with the topic. I'm like, all right, sit down and watch it. And yeah, thanks, Josh.
So it's from 2014, directed by Rob Himba. He's got a bit of a name for himself by directing another short film called Eagle Walk, which is about Bigfoot. But yeah, this was something else. It was took place in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And this couple bought this like spider silk. This jar of spider silk that ended up having a spider in it that got loose and ended up finding its way inside the girl and then found its way outside the girl. And yeah, we'll kind of leave it at that.
That's pretty much the easiest plot summary you've ever had to do.
But it was, I mean, I thought it was worth 15 minutes of your time.
It's pretty, it's well made.
Very well made.
It did look really good. Right. I really had fun with the fact that like they had action movie sounding music playing a lot of times during like the suspense scenes.
Yeah.
And it's pretty graphic actually.
Yeah, very graphic. Because
I remember you saying like, oh, I can't find it on YouTube. And then when we're watching it, I look to you, I'm like, that's why you can't find it on YouTube, Josh.
Yeah, lots and lots of nudity. I think the lead girl she's actually a porn star. But I thought it was really effective and worth your time. I don't think I'm going to be remembering it a year from now, but
Yeah.
It was a good little watch.
Took like 12 minutes out of your life.
Yeah, and had, you know, anytime I see a tarantula crawling around, it does a good job of freaking me out a bit. I hate tarantulas.
I know you said you've seen so many movies or stuff with spiders the last couple of days that you said God. If you saw one in your house, you'd probably scream or something.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'd scream, but I definitely wouldn't be too happy.
Head for the hills.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we head to wrap up?
So you want to bring up some scenes though, right?
Let's bring up a few scenes from a couple movies that aren't particularly insect movies. I only have one or two.
Okay.
The one that I think is important is Candyman.
Obviously, whereas
there's
yeah.
the scene in it where, and this is the only time I've really found bees that scary, is when he opens his mouth and all the bees come swarming out of his mouth.
Right.
That's one of the few times that I've actually been scared of bees.
Don't they play a part in all the Candyman movies, though?
I don't even remember the sequels that they do, but I don't really.
Like, I know they're on the cover of Farewell to the Flesh.
Yeah, I don't really care about the sequels, to tell you the truth. Yeah. I really only like the first one.
Yeah.
But I
wanted
to mention.
That's a good pick. I didn't even think of that one.
I wanted to mention that. And then I also, speaking of bees, go on to YouTube and watch the Nicolas Cage bee freak out from the Wicker Man remake, just so you can have a good laugh. I'm not going to talk about it, but holy fuck. It's something else. And the only other one I wanted to mention, there's only two more I want to mention, and then you can do your honorable mentions, then we'll wrap this bad boy up, because we're running long in the tooth. Damnation Alley from 1977. There's a fight with some scorpions. It's pretty badass.
Right on.
Badass in the sense that if I watched it now, I probably think it would look horrible.
Yeah.
Because it was like one of those like matte kind of things, you know, like forced perspective things. And the only other ones I want to mention was Lucio Fulci's City of the Living Dead, where there's a scene with where they open the window and there's a big maggot storm, because maggots creep me the fuck out.
Right.
Out of any insects in the world, maggots are the ones that I hate the most.
Yeah.
Because they look so gross and they basically live off of dead flesh.
Right.
And there's also a scene in that where one of the zombie priest characters shoves a handful, his hand is packed with bugs and maggots into a girl's face.
Right.
Which is pretty gross. And then the only other movie I want to quickly throw out there is Phenomena. I always call it Phenoma. I don't know why. Dario Argento's, where she falls into that pool filled with the bugs.
No, that's just muck.
It's bugs in there too, dude. It's gross.
Is there bugs in there? There no, is. I think it's just like a
no,
slime.
No, there's
pit
all
full
kind
of
bugs in there. It's
skeletons.
Gross. I remember that. I remember there's
you
bugs.
You might remember the bugs from like when she's like, because like, yeah, I mean, the bugs play a big part in Phenomena, like, because Jennifer Connelly's character can, like...
No, I'm pretty sure there's bugs in that pool. It's gross.
Okay, well, I don't want to pull another Animal House thing here, but...
Well, we'll look into
I'm
it.
I'm not going to fight about it. But,
okay, let's not.
But Phenomena is good, worth mentioning, because she does have a connection with bugs, like a... like Firefly kind of leads her to things.
Yeah.
And there's also a scene where she's being teased in the girl school where she works, and she basically summons like a horde of flies, and it's a really cool scene. Yeah. So yeah, flies play a big part in Phenomena.
That's all I got.
All right, well, sticking on the Fulci kick, we'll talk. I just wanted to bring up the Beyond, because there's a really great you know, guy in a library inexplicably falls off a ladder where inexplicably a bunch of tarantulas come out of beneath the shelves and
eat
his face.
Hey, maybe those tarantulas were doing research. Maybe they had to figure out how to take over a small southern town that William Shatner happened to live in. You don't
Dude,
know.
The guy falls for no reason.
I know, it makes no sense. I know.
No reason. Then tarantulas, for no reason, come out.
Let's eat this dude's
half
face.
Half of which are like clearly fake tarantulas. Eat the guy's face off.
And then disappear.
And then go back.
Yeah,
and
I don't get
the end
it.
Of the scene. But it's a pretty memorable scene. I mean, it if you've seen The Beyond, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Well, The Beyond, a lot of The Beyond doesn't make sense if you really think about it.
No. I think we've talked about The Beyond right here.
Yeah.
All right, another Fulci classic was in a movie called Enigma from 1987. And probably the only movie I know where someone gets covered by snails.
Wow, so that sounds scary.
It's pretty gross. So that's another Fulci scene.
Pretty frightening.
Yeah. Bond, another a classic spider scene is in Dr. No, where Connery's version of Bond has a tarantula crawling on him and needs to get rid of it. But again, when I think of tarantula scenes, Dr. No definitely comes to mind. What else we got here? Amityville Horror. There's the flies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not so convinced about Amityville Horror.
I don't like the movie.
No,
but
neither do
I. It's, again, a kind of a memorable scene, though.
I don't like the movie, and I read the book recently, and what a crock of shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There's that worm thing that goes into, I think, Chekhov's ear in Star Trek The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That thing's pretty gross.
Yeah, I thought of that thing.
That's the only, I've not really seen the Star Trek movies, but I remember that when I saw it on TV as a kid.
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, I hope a brain slug doesn't come get me.
That thing was pretty awful.
Yeah.
There's a giant bee from Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger. We can't have a bug episode without mentioning Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and the whole bug room that...
That bug room's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that they have to go through to get to the heart ripping out scene in the temple.
What a bunch of amazing scenes in a row.
Yeah, but that was a pretty great scene, the bug room. And when she has the Kate Capshaw has to reach into and pull... Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Isn't the ceiling, coming down, too? To crush them or something.
Yeah, and the only way to stop it is she has to reach into that hole. Oh, God.
I want
to
watch the Indiana Jones creeps movies out, again. Yeah. Maybe you should watch that as your next series.
That's a good idea. I've been trying to watch those for a while, but I don't know which box the DVDs are in.
Oh, okay.
I know. It's super embarrassing. I can't even find them. I've got so many. and I'm going to wrap it up with two pretty great tarantula scenes. I don't know if you've seen either of these, Chris. The first is there was a dream sequence in Something Wicked This Way Comes, and the two little kids, it goes into this weird dream where their room basically becomes overrun by tarantulas.
Yep.
It's super gross, super creepy. I might even, if I can find that thing, I'll post it on our Facebook page because it's a pretty great scene. And another really great scene that's super creepy with tarantulas is in a Coffin Joe movie. I can't remember where Coffin Joe's from. I think he's from Chile or something.
Yeah, something like that.
But it's called This Night I Will Possess Your Corpse.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where there's all these women in this dormitory and tarantulas come in and these girls are all in nighties, see-through nighties and stuff. And they're just covered in tarantulas. And man, oh man, kudos to those actresses because I could never have done what these women did. And it goes on for quite a while and it's just tarantulas crawling over these girls. And I think that's one of the creepiest scenes in a bug movie, of spiders that exists.
Hmm.
So I'll try and find that one too and post that on our Facebook page. But I guess we can pretty much wrap her up.
Okay. So that's our long-ass talk about killer bugs. Hopefully you're still with us and hopefully you've got some good recommendations from us. If there's anything that you think we missed that we should check out, because we're always open to watching bug movies, I think.
Yeah.
You can head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/GBW podcast, or you can suggest them on Twitter at GBW podcast, or of course, visit us on the web at thevideograveyard.com/GBW podcast. And one last spiel before we go and let you free from your bug-strewn existence is if you could go to iTunes and give us a rating and a review and give us a little bit more help in getting us bumped up there and some exposure, it'd be much appreciated. Those of you who've done it, great. We appreciate everything you've done. Get some more people out there. Gets the word on the street. Let's do it. Let's do this thing.
Okay.
Or else I'll send Josh to your house and he can extol the virtues of Nightmare on Elm Street 4 to you personally.
Okay.
And nobody wants that shit.
It's better than the virtues of Nightmare on Elm Street 3, which everyone else
Go fuck yourself.
Okay. Hey, man, bug off.
Bug off. Oh, Jesus Christ. All right. Till next time. We'll see you later.
Bye.